This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day as the Winnipeg Jets play their second preseason game of the season, of the week, tonight at Bell MTS Place when the Edmonton Oilers come to town. Full day coverage here on Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day, of course, with us here on the Big Show, the Don Vito Roundtable, the Gondola Pizza warm-up, and then the afternoon ride live from Boston Pizza City Place with Hustler and Rick Ralph at 3. 6 o'clock, Kevin Orshevsky has the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show, and then it's Puck Drop with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns right here on TSN 1290 between the Jets and the Oilers, followed up by the Huron Windows postgame show. Once again, live from Boston Pizza City Place with Kevin Orshevsky and friends. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you today. Lots to get to. We're going to delve into this game preseason, how the roster will change, and what you expect from that. We'll touch on the Goldeyes, who did get probably, although due to weather, a much-needed night off after playing 17 innings to stave off elimination. Blue Bombers, Jamal Westerman, done for the year. We'll get into that. Major League Baseball, NFL, Jose Bautista started his final series in Toronto this season and likely of his career. Paul Edmonds is going to join us. Jared Clinton, Gus Katsaros, and two chances to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. All that coming up, plus an hour of your phone calls. Gentlemen, how are we today on a rainy Wednesday?
Not too bad, man. The Goldeyes get that day. That was, I suppose, well-deserved and perfect, really, for both teams. I just give them a break for Pete's sake, let them rest. And didn't have to take on the elements of last night. Unlike myself, the young fellow wakes me up from the nap, and he's got a bit of a posse over, and they want to go play soccer. I'm like, dude, it's raining out. He's like, we want to go play, Daddy. I'm like, okay, let's go. So out in the rain, here we go. Till dark, right? It was a bunch of fun. The guy's just full of, it's neat. When I remember being that age when I didn't understand. I have four older uncles, and I didn't understand when they got tired. Like, why are you getting tired, or how are you getting tired? Right? Those suckers running me ragged out there, and just going through drills and stuff, and just unbridled love for the game. It's just beautiful to watch.
How are you getting tired? I was born tired.
You could make a fortune if you could somehow harness youthful energy and exuberance, put that in a bottle.
Yes.
Unbridled enthusiasm. So the Goldeyes get a reprieve. We'll touch on that in just a moment, but the Jets get back at it. We're going to hear from some of the Jets and Paul Maurice at 7 a.m. today in the Royal Sports Power Hour. We'll delve into his thoughts on some of the players he was asked about yesterday, including Tyler Myers probably. And Mr. Steve Mason gets the start tonight against the Oilers. Paul Maurice saying the high-end, top-end won't change. So expect Little Wheeler, Shifley, Laine, Ehlers, Perreault to all play tonight. The bottom two lines are expected to change, he said. And then they're switching out the defensemen. So I would expect Tyler Myers to see some action. And then a lot of the youth as well. And what are you expecting tonight, especially with your first glimpse at Steve Mason in a Winnipeg Jets uniform in a game?
Just be neat to see where he's at. You know, like seeing the Knights now, right, when you get to watch the results from the hockey games and see the scores and see some of the scores that can be surprising during a regular season, but you have to remind yourself it doesn't really matter as far as the scores go, that it's just simply preseason. But it will be neat. I heard an audio clip here from Paul Maurice that I think will probably wind up being the conversation of the day, really, and saying that Tyler Myers, who we expect to see tonight, that if he's playing at a high rate, that he's not going to, you know, he's not going to stay in the 5-6 sort of role. And when you're talking about Byfuglien and Trouba, where pretty much all the free world is expecting them to be 1-2, maybe Trouba, then Buff, and you wonder, we've wondered, how are they going to manage this situation with Tyler Myers? That's quite a statement from Paul Maurice, and you just kind of wonder what could transpire from it.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, someone's got to play that. Yeah. I know in a perfect world you don't want it, but someone's going to have to do it. And as far as we see it, it's going to be Tyler Myers, at least early on, and then maybe becomes kind of a play for your ice time movement after that. But, yeah, there's a couple of intriguing things for tonight's game. I think it has to start with Steve Mason, because how many times has a new goalie come into Winnipeg? It's been pretty rare over the course of their 6-7 years since they've come back here. And hopefully he just has a strong debut. And you wonder what kind of team the Oilers are going to send over here, if 97 will be part of the brigade trying to welcome Steve Mason to Winnipeg for the first time. But I would say, at the very least, enjoy the puck movement, Jets fans. Enjoy a goalie that can confidently handle the puck and make plays with it. Because Hellebuck had a couple of moments with the puck in game, in game one. And there's some people tweeting at all of us, say, is Mason like that? No. Don't. Mason is not like that. He's much more adept at playing the puck. So, I mean, you kind of wonder what kind of dynamic that has with whatever regulars are going to be playing on defense with the Jets tonight. But I'll be watching that. And I think the penalties thing is another thing to look for. Just whoever played in that first game, how adept are they at kind of taking that and evolving into game two and trying to, like, maybe do we go from 17 to 10? Do we go from 17 to 20? Like, just to see where that whole, because that's been the story of the preseason so far.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I remember that it resulted in a goal, and Mark Stewart was with Connor Hellebuck, and nobody knew what anybody was doing, and it ended up in a goal last season. I remember talking to some of the Jets brass in the press box, and they said, that's actually on Stewart. We instruct our players to go get the puck from Connor Hellebuck, like to go take it from him or just have him stop it. And so that's going to be an interesting element of how that plays out tonight with him. For sure. And then we're probably going to see some of the other younger guys on this training camp and this roster as well. I'm interested in seeing that. And then Mr. Tyler Myers. It was an interesting quote, and we'll hear from Paul Maurice, like I said, at 7 o'clock on Tyler Myers. But I see this playing out. Like, I don't know who's going to get 5-6 minutes. I think you're right. I think they're going to ease this back in. But whoever's playing well is going to fight. Like, do you see a more balanced, where it's not 6 to 8 minutes on that third pairing, it's going to be more of a 10 to 12, and then the rest of it plays out the way it plays out? I mean, I see Tyler Myers. I think Paul Maurice is thinking in his head that Tyler Myers is going to help the penalty kill just by being there, and he's going to be out there a lot. Because Dustin Byfuglien's not, he said.
Yeah, certainly.
There's going to be a lot of minutes there.
Think, yeah, and seeing Wicks is asking, well, this, you know, the Jets out there for the second time, are the penalties going to be reduced? You look at Ottawa, Toronto last night, 7 and 8 power plays for each team here, so I don't expect a whole lot to change. You know, it'll be something in and around 15 or more than that. But watching Tyler Myers, and you know, the question is he going to be healthy this year? Can he stay healthy? Can he give you 78 or something like that, maybe in all 82 games. Can he do that? He's really been bit by the injury bug in the last little bit here, and it would be spectacular for him to be able to reel off basically a complete season here, and maybe even the likes for Toby Enstrom. If it is, and boy, do the Jets deserve this, if they can keep that D-core healthy this year, and, you know, whatever wiggles in and out and up and down as far as within that six. But if it is Enstrom and Myers that is your third pairing this year, I dare say that's the best third pairing in the NHL. And it would just be spectacular to see what this team could achieve, how much better they might be from a defensive core standpoint if they can stay healthy and if that's their primary third pair. That's going to be something to watch and see the impact on the level of success for this team.
Yeah, and you know what? I think third pairing minutes for Myers is probably the best thing for him to start the season. Like, you don't want
both him, those guys.
Yeah,
maybe,
yeah, right? Toby, yeah, too. Like, you don't want those guys right out of the gate playing 23, 24 minutes a night and really pushing that body maybe to the point of kind of reckless abandon. So, I have no problem with him playing third pair minutes to start the year, and B, moving forward, I have no problem with them playing third pair minutes to start the year. It doesn't mean 10 minutes a night, but if it's somewhere around 18, that's the reality of the situation in Winnipeg right now, because Trouba Morrissey, right? Like, there's no argument to be made that you'd want somebody to be playing more than those two guys. Would you rather have Buffalo or Myers out there for more minutes a game? I think we'd all agree with Dustin Byfuglien. And then it might change, you know, in-game depending on how the state of the game goes. Like you said, if there's more penalty kill time, maybe Myers plays more than Byfuglien because they're going to try and shield Buff away from playing 5-on-4, that sort of thing. So I kind of wonder if this is just a bit of lip service by Paul Maurice where you ask him a question and he's not going to come out and say, look, Tyler Myers is going to be on our third pairing this year. We'll play him as such. You kind of try and word it in a way that will publicly not cause a whole lot of kerfuffle and at the same time maybe keep Myers' confidence level up where he wants it to be.
Josh Morrissey, the sophomore season everybody's going to watch. Jacob Trouba had the rookie year. Then everybody expected so much. Then, you know, last year, the year after that, how much do you see those two playing? Like, if everybody's healthy.
Morrissey and Trouba?
Yeah, and you have, like, you know, Byfuglien on the power play. You have Myers, probably the key cog on the penalty kill. How much do you see those top two playing, and how much do you want to see them play? I know we want to sit here and go 25 minutes a night because they're young, they're good, they're stable. But realistically, how much time, if everything balances out and everybody on the D-Corps is healthy, as we discuss the Jets lineup tonight for Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day here on TSN 1290, how much do you realistically want to see them play?
Absolutely 25 minutes a night. I'll take Buff, put Buff down to 20 or you know, give the third pairing whatever it is and give Buff something that's real manageable, like a lot of people, including yourself, keep sort of harping on to give him less minutes. But there is no doubt whatsoever, Jacob Trouba has shown us over the last couple of years that when he's out there for big chunks, you know, allow him to be the workhorse. If those two guys are going to be your primary and best defensive pairing out there, it's a crime if they're not out there for 25 minutes a night.
Yeah, 25 minutes would be great. I think that would be an ultimate scenario for the Jets. If you're talking about a bare minimum, 22, 23 probably. Like you want them somewhere in that 23 to 25-minute range, I think. And if that's the case, it means they're playing well. And I see no reason why you wouldn't want to play. I don't know if it's your two best defensemen, but for sure your best right and your best left-handed. Like, you got to load those guys up on minutes. And Jacob Trouba's kind of the opposite, the anti-Byfuglien, where the more minutes he seems to get, the better and better his game gets, the more physical he plays, the more he asserts himself into the game. And Josh Morrissey, I mean, you guys talked to Paul Maurice at the Iceplex before training camp. And when you asked him if Morrissey's season was kind of shadowed by Liney and underrated, he made a sound that you don't hear coaches make. He almost a guffaw and then talked about Morrissey's game for 3.5 minutes. Like so when the coaches that watch these guys play every day kind of marvel and are blown away by the progress that he made in his rookie season, he just seems like the kind of player that has his head screwed on straight. And in terms of that sophomore slump, I really don't see a way that Morrissey has a bit of a setback. And if that's the case, he was outstanding all year, and I would expect the same out of him this year, and I'd load him up on more minutes.
There's no reason to me why he can't go 25, 20, and 15 in a general sense for those three pairings.
Well, are you concerned, like, at all with more? Like, Trouba is more than ready to be the guy on this team defensively, I think. Do you concern about just Morrissey, you know, because now he's going to think more, he's going to, you know, try to do more, they're going to ask more of him. Do you worry about that at all, just being his second year? Because I agree with you, and like I thought Paul Maurice on our show last Friday made a great point. If Patrick Laine isn't on this team, and even Nikolai Ehlers takes a step, say it's Matthew Tkachuk or whoever would have been on this team in the season they had as a different rookie, Josh Morrissey would have been the story of the year. So are you concerned at all with him just being in his second year, or no way? Like, let's ride him as much as we can and get the most out of him.
And I don't know, like, ride him as much as we can, silly, some sort of tired horse sort of thing. Not like that, but I certainly think, you know, as a 22, turning 23-year-old during the course of the season, didn't show at no point last year was there any sort of a blip for, you know, outside of a rough go, maybe specifically with a shift, only to come back and be as strong. Like, it was what he, if he plays at the same level as last year, like what Paul Maurice is talking about, if they're able to get that out of him again, I see no reason why to hold him back, sort of thing. He averaged 19.29 last year. But to me, for sure, especially with big-time five-on-five minutes, then utilizing him however you're going to on special teams, if you even need to, or like how much you are going to in a shorthanded sense here, mostly with Trouba out there, but just until there's some level of falter or anything like that, like he is in a one-way direction straight up, basically, in what we saw from him last year, and let him mature and blossom with Jacob Trouba.
Fair enough. We'll get more into it. Burchard Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. Jets host the Oilers tonight at 7 right here on TSN 1290. Up next, we'll delve into this Game 5 of the Gold Eyes. It is raining out today, postponed last night. We'll touch on that. And, of course, Bombers coming up at 6:30. Paul Maurice and Jets comments at 7 o'clock today. Lots to get to on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruick. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a part of the iHeartRadio Network. Download the iHeartRadio app and listen to us on all your favorite devices, or go to the Perfect Four section and choose from hundreds of channels to suit any mood or music taste. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app and get streaming. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you. We're going to get into the Bombers as they continue to make preps for Friday night's game at IGF, hosting the Ottawa Red Blacks. Big news there. They've lost Jamal Westerman for the season. We'll touch on that at the bottom of the hour. And also tonight, along with it being a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day, hosting the Oilers in their second preseason action, the Winnipeg Goldeyes will play Game 5, the fifth and deciding game of the American Association Final, after staving off elimination on a balk in the ninth inning to tie at 3-3 on Monday night. They then go 17 innings and win the game to force a Game 5. So I'm sure the players weren't upset about getting a rest, but maybe they wanted to get right at it. Adrenaline pumping at this time of the year. But they'll play tonight at Shaw Park. Game 5 starts at 6 o'clock, first pitch, and we have a pair of tickets to give away for you if you want to go see that final tonight. And who doesn't if you want to take that in? 780-1290, 780-1290, the 12th caller through, we will get you to Shaw Park tonight to potentially, well, you will see a championship awarded and potentially see the Winnipeg Goldeyes do it on home field at Shaw Park. So 12th caller through, 780-1290, will get you to Game 5 of the American Association Final to see who takes this year's title. Yesterday was the day, year to the day, that the Goldeyes won last year's American Association title. And I thought when I was hearing that on the Gondola Pizza warm-up with Husser, how eerie would that be if they go back-to-back on the exact same day a year later? That would have been cool.
It's not all that eerie to me.
No? Because, like the same day?
Well, they're going to be within the same week or so, no matter what, probably year in, year out, aren't they? But just super cool for the organization. Such a solid, since the arrival, really, of the Goldeyes, up and down, so many good people involved with the organization and their impact on the community. They're just so easy to love, the Goldeyes. And boy, it'd be awesome to see them get another ring. Andrew Collier is going to be running out of fingers, and Forney, all those boys have been running out of fingers right away.
The story around this is, and this season, because the 5 hours and 59 minutes in Game 4 was the longest in the American Association. I believe there was a game longer in the Northern League, the former league the Goldeyes were in. But they broke the record for the longest game in the American Association. They set the record previous this year at like 5 hours and 24 minutes. And that probably was that epic game that they called the game of the year, where Kansas City tied it in the ninth. And then they each got runs. And then a guy had to come in and throw with his non-pitching arm. But the story around this and how it's played out is fascinating to me. And especially being independent baseball, with how these guys travel, the amount of games in a season, the no days off, and how this is sort of stretched out into where it was. And then, like, the Monday night, probably the talk of the town on Tuesday about how it all played out and where they're at.
It was even it was a big piece in Deadspin about the game. Like the game itself had all kinds of legs in the States just because of the bizarreness of it. When you see the Wingnuts cheering to the degree, like they were absolutely invested, done. They won the championship, and then for the ump to walk over and like the way the whole thing played out was right out of Hollywood, wasn't it?
And what I had read from Deadspin and the other sites is it was basically a consensus that was a no balk. Like just about everybody commenting said, "Whoa, Wichita got the bit of a screw job there," which I thought was pretty. We hadn't really seen the video yet,
yeah.
But I guess the one that everybody else saw. Fish might have got away with one there.
Well, and Mike McIntyre from the Winnipeg Free Press was on the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick Ralph on TSN 1290 yesterday, and he talked about that, and he said, I watched the GIF or the video of it five times, and he said, the only thing that tells me that it is, because he goes, he still can't tell where the pitcher balked, is the catcher immediately for Wichita just took his mask off and didn't go celebrate, just shook his head. Like, he heard the call immediately, and he didn't start arguing it. He just sort of, and I'll have to watch it again, but Mike said, I watched it five times, and I still can't tell where the pitcher balked. But he said, on the GIF, you can see the catcher for Wichita literally just react like, it's not over, and yeah. I can't believe we just did this. Now, body language is body language. You don't know what he's thinking. Maybe he's going on, you got to be kidding me, that's not a balk, whatever. But it looks like he's the only guy on Wichita that understood, because he would have heard the call, yeah. But he didn't get in the ump's face. He didn't argue about it. He was just sort of stood up and like, this is, you know, whatever. Now, I know a bunch of people in Wichita have been going online and saying that it wasn't a balk as well, but it's playing out the way it's playing out. It's very interesting to me. And Mike McIntyre also said he talked to Rick Forney after the game. It was about 2 a.m. in Shaw Park. And Forney's a beauty, as we all know. Never pulls any punches. And he says, if that was you over there as a manager, how would you feel right now? And he flat out said, I would be barfing. I would be throwing up if I lost a game like that to win a championship.
We talked yesterday about hoping that the NHL and the refs carry this situation forward and complain about how the rules change late in games or in the playoff run, all the rest of it. How about the Yaichis on the ump to make a call like that and last out in the championship game?
Well, and that's what we're talking about. You're right. Is if the call's a call, yeah. you gotta be able to make it. We have a winner. We'll let you know who it is and talk Bombers next on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province of Manitoba is packed with shining stars in the world of sports, and every week TSN 1290 would like to showcase, reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do, going that extra mile. Nominate a Manitoba athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on the Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon right here on the Big Show, including this Friday, TSN1290.ca. If you want to put somebody's name forward, we'll see if we can get them that $50 gift card from Subway. Eat fresh. I was eating Subway the other day. It's outstanding. Got the foot long. Maybe a little too long for the time of the night I had it, but it was good.
Oh, that's the killer, right?
At this age. Yeah. But good stuff at Subway, and we'll be happy to pass that along from our good friends there. This is the Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. It is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live from Boston Pizza at 6 o'clock with Kevin Olszewski. Jets and Oilers at 7. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns with the call. And then, of course, the Huron Windows postgame show with Mr. Olszewski and friends following that up. And the afternoon ride will be live from Boston Pizza City Place as well today. We'll get into that later in the program. We'll hear from Mr. Paul Maurice and some of the Jets at 7 a.m. Right now, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers announced yesterday, late in the afternoon, that Jamal Westerman is done for the season. Of course, the Banjo Bowl would have been his last game played. Then the bye week was there. did not partake in practice, and they said he needed further evaluation. And then the news comes out from the Bombers themselves that he's done for the year. Our very own Darren Bombing here at TSN 1290 was down at the media day yesterday. He covered this extensively on CFL 60 last night, which was on Tuesday due to the Jets game on Monday. And here's his exchange with head coach Mike O'Shea prior to the announcement that Jamal Westerman was done.
Did you get a better idea of Jamal Westerman?
We're still, there's a couple things left to talk about this afternoon, so we'll have a much clearer picture later today, I'm sure.
Is it something complicated that through the entire bye week and everything? That...
No, I mean, anytime you're dealing with a player and you know, something that's holding them out of practice, you got to find out all the facts, right? You got to do what's best for the player and have those conversations and get information. And I mean, that doesn't seem complicated to me. It seems like the regular process.
What can us media guys call it, upper or lower body?
Nothing yet.
Really?
Yeah.
So general?
Well, this, like I said, we're gonna figure things out a little better later today.
Comfortable with your options as far as the ratio and the defensive line?
Yeah. We got a lot of. I mean, everybody that steps on that field is waiting for their opportunity, and we believe and we're confident in these guys that they'll make good on their opportunities. So we'll see if it comes to that.
Could it possibly be an opportunity, if Jamal wasn't playing, an opportunity for Trent Courtney to see a few more reps at that spot?
I mean, we'll have to see about the game planning and stuff like that. But as far as Trent Courtney goes, on a separate note, I mean, God, I thought he's really blossomed this year, you know. He's playing well for us on the special teams that we've asked him to play. He gets in on usually a fair number of snaps on defense, and he's got a hell of a motor, and he's strong, and he knows what he's doing. And that's one of those guys that I've really enjoyed being around, watching him progress from last year to this year. Man, he's fun to watch.
Head coach Mike O'Shea with Darren Bombing and other members of the media talking about Jamal Westerman's. Now, it's said to be an upper body injury. That's been more clarified. Jamal Westerman will speak with the media after practice today and during the media availability, so we'll have more on the situation on TSN 1290 coming up. But what do you make of this? And what before we get into how much this hurts the lineup, just from his talent but also being Canadian, the whole, what could it be? Like, is it? Because he was at practice yesterday, wasn't partaking, but he seemed to be, Darren Bombing was saying, jumping around, waving his arms around, having fun with the guys.
Really?
Yeah, I heard him on the afternoon ride.
His tweet, I was just going through that tweet, actually, to make sure, but he said Westerman was literally jumping and waving his arms in the air at practice. Makes you wonder.
That's really weird, was
his tweet.
Really weird, for sure. Because if it's a shoulder or... a peck or anything like anything upper body, you're not going to be waving your arms around. So that's really kooky for sure. Maybe
the head's the upper body too.
Yes, that's where I was going to go with that. So there's a real good possibility that that'll be involved for sure, huh? But I don't think the Canadian part of it, the Bombers have enough space sort of with the number of starters that they have, Canadian starters, to absorb this. So I don't think you're going to see much of a drop-off. Like a Westerman is good, but everything we've seen from Jeff Cote, who's likely to start in his position, and Okpalago to start on the other side, I think what those two guys bring, it will be equal to what we've seen from Jamal Westerman up to this point. What I'm really intrigued by, and the whole Trent Courtney possibility now, right, where you get an injury like this, likely that will equal Trent Courtney getting some more reps, depending on how long Westerman's out here. And Trent Courtney could, I know he was green when he came here, and we're hearing Mike O'Shea saying that he believes he's blossomed during the course of this year. Trent Courtney is an absolute physical freak. The speed and talking about the engine, like, he's basically, to me, a sort of a Tom Canada guy from the engine standpoint. But then you get some physical gifts and skill that Tom Canada never had available to him with the speed involved to Trent Courtney. So I'm not sure how well-honed he is. You know, like tricks of the trade for getting around the edge and being disciplined and smart and taking advantage of what the tackle and the rest of the O-line might be giving you. But this very well could be the type of situation that completely catapults Trent Kearney into a starter possibly in the CFL. Just wait and watch, depending on how long Jamal Anderson is out with an injury here, to see what Trent Kearney does with the additional time here and the opportunity presented to him.
Plus, Andy Malumba was recently released as well, and maybe he's a guy that gets brought in. But to speak to those numbers you talked about, at the... This is the NFL Combine. Or no, CFL Combine, sorry. These were Kearney's numbers in his draft year. 34 bench press reps, a 38-inch vertical, and a 10-foot-6-inch broad jump to go along with a 4.5 40 as a defensive end. Those numbers would have put him second in each event in the NFL Combine in his position.
Like 4.5, and he's 6'3", 267. 4.5 is pretty fast.
4.5 is a good number for a receiver. It's a very good number for a running back. And you're talking about a defense. Like, he, in his draft class, the second most athletic defensive end in the world. So, and that's the guy. So, like, you have to think if he has any lick of football sense, any idea of just kind of the mental part and where to be on the plays and things like that. I mean, there's no way you can keep this kid away from the quarterback long enough, as long as he kind of understands the subtler parts of football. So it's this, I mean, you hope it's not a Wally Pipp situation, because Jamal Westerman, I mean, he is second in the CFL in sacks right now. So, I mean, it's a position you could afford to lose if you're the Bombers, but at the same time, you were getting all-star level play from Jamal Westerman. But if this kid can figure the game out, look at, like, the there is no ceiling on this kid's CFL game.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm actually looking forward to seeing if this guy gets a shot and seeing him play. The Westerman thing, though, what does this do? You know, Matt Nichols was on the afternoon ride yesterday and talking, you know, not only what he does, or not only the ratio as a Canadian, but this guy's played a lot of football. He's played in the NFL. He's got experience. And he's one of those guys that is always pumped up, always got a smile on his face. Always, like Michael Shea said, his motor is always going around the team. This is a big loss for the team, not only on the D line, but just, you know, he's going to be around. He's not going anywhere, but just in the room, what can this do? Like, is this a hole to fill now, or?
Yeah, to me, it doesn't change much in the room. He will still be around, although your role, no matter who you are, once you're injured, your role is greatly diminished, and it's kind of, things change. Your relationship with the team changes for a little bit. So depending on the amount of time here that goes by, I really don't believe, like, I believe Jeff Coat and Okpalago will be just fine and dandy if that's the starting guys that you have going on the end. And then with Shaylon, they still have Shaylon Green as an important Trent Kearney to complement the whole thing with Jeff Coat and Okpalago. So I don't think we're going to see a noticeable drop-off. Like, Jeff Coat at times has looked dominant out there. Okpalago is a beast as well. So I think that that position, this is another situation where you're going to see that Bomber depth that's been sneaky solid for a couple of years here is going to shine again. And you just hope that for his own sake, that Jamal Westerman comes back and comes back healthy. A very strange, that whole thing, the upper body thing, and then hear the jumping around, and wait, that's strange, right? So we can only wonder. You know dang well the organization will keep that on the down low, and you just kind of hope Westerman does come back healthy quickly.
Yeah, I mean, losing Heath, Leggett, or Randall would be a crippling blow to the Bomber. Like, it would be a loss they wouldn't be able to recover from, at least with the Westerman injury. There's the possibility that they're able to kind of maintain their D-line pressure, which has been pretty, you know, despite all the defensive struggles, it's been pretty solid this year.
The other news of the day with the Bombers, and we're talking Bombers as ahead of the game on the Red Blacks, of course, this Friday night at Investors Group Field. We will have tickets to this game to give away for you on the Big Show, TSN 1290, later today. But as Darren Bombing was doing his fine work out at practice, said Ian Wild, his wrist is still not practicing. He's on the second stint of the six-game injured list. Earliest would be October 1st. Full span would be October 13th, so it looks like it's still going to be a while for Ian Wild, at least a couple weeks, and potentially a month from now.
And even with the Ian Wild injury now, right, Knox stepped up and is, I believe he's going to be healthy upcoming, and then you have Santos Knox, who followed Knox last game that looked pretty good. So
real good.
You get that whole depth part shining through again, And you hope Ian Wild comes back as quickly as possible and all the rest of it. But the depth of the Bomber team here is shining. It's just fantastic. What they've done from that perspective is remarkable over the last 4 or 5 years.
How rare is that to go from Knox to Santos Knox when injuries at the same position come up?
I would say considerably rare. Yeah.
These are the things I notice. We're going to talk some NFL. We're going to talk some Major League Baseball. And Jose Bautista is starting potentially his last games in Toronto as a Blue Jay and potentially his last games ever. We'll delve into that next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the 5th and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrities. September 22nd and 23rd, the money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on the opening hour of The Big Show, TSN 1290. 51 minutes past the hour. Royal Sports Power Hour coming up. We'll hear from some of the Jets qualify somebody for our hockey nights in Vegas. Paul Edmonds will join us at the bottom of the next hour to tee up tonight's game between the Oilers and the Jets on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day here on TSN 1290. A little news and notes time to get to, gentlemen, and none bigger than this sort of crept up on me, and I never really realized it until last night. The Jays start their final home series of the season versus the Kansas City Royals in Toronto, and it's likely the last time you see Jose Bautista, potentially not even in a Major League Baseball uniform, but as a Blue Jay at home, and sort of all the memories come back. He's hitting, I believe, 207 this year.
205, yeah.
205 now. And just the whole thought process of bringing him back, and then he wanted more money and all this, we sort of forget now that it's coming to an end, just the magnitude and the impact that he's had on the Blue Jays for the past decade.
Yeah, and they're a mutual option for 17 mil that won't get picked up, right, at season's end. So it would look like it's all over here. But he does, like, what he, and it's, this is sort of the, I guess this just the way typically it happens, right? Had he have left last year in free agency, everyone maybe would have, you know, just had that much more sort of magical memories of him and not the continued sort of decline here. I don't know how much it hurts his memory for Blue Jays fans. Probably ultimately not much, right? And when he's away for a year or two, no one will ever forget the bat flip and the level of excitement and all the rest. And he's like top five in pretty much all of their major offensive categories. Made a nice grab yesterday. He did, so that's hopefully goes out in style, can find some of his magic here in this final home run. But by and large, the tenure of Jose Bautista in with the Blue Jays here, and specifically over the last couple of years prior to this, that were so much fun to watch. He played such a huge role in it, and one of the biggest, maybe the second biggest hit ever, really, right? Or top three for sure here for the Blue Jays with that bat flip.
Yeah, and I think that's the right way to look at it. People kind of forget that he's probably easily a top five Jay of all time. Mm-hmm. Like, you're talking about one of the best players in your organization's history. It just kind of gets washed away with, you know, maybe this season and the last one as well with the decline that we saw. But he was right there amongst league leaders in home runs his first couple of years with the team, and he dropped 54 bombs his first kind of full season with the Jays. So it's one of those things that I think maybe 5 years from now, you look back and you kind of appreciate what the Jays had a bit more, and you kind of ignore the last couple of seasons. But there was, during those playoff runs, and one of those years was Josh Donaldson's MVP campaign, there wasn't a player at all I would pick to have up at bat when it mattered the most than Jose Bautista. He was that especially that first playoff run, he was so lights out. And as much as we all remember the bat flip homer, that game six in Kansas City to keep the season alive, launched two moonshots mm-hmm. into the bleachers at Kauffman Stadium to give the Jays a chance in that one. He was one of the most impressive playoff performers, you know, we've seen it in baseball over the past 5 or so years.
Well, playoffs, yeah. And I don't get me wrong. He's 36 years old. I'm not trying to knock him here. But this is his career average.
Setting the stage before you knock
him. It's a .250 career average. It's a .363 on base percentage, 330 home runs, 922 RBIs. I mean, they're not Hall of Fame numbers. There's a lot of dingers, and he's an average hitter. But he can hit bombs, and so all-time Jay, for sure, like the things he did, and especially postseason, and the bat flip is most recent, but you bring up a great point, Brandon. There's been other moments that he has literally had this team on his back. But where does he sit all-time, like at 250?
Where does he sit all-time?
Like, is he a top all-time Jay?
He's a
major leagues, like, is he? Because literally, like, when the Leafs were awful, and the Argos were the Argos, even when they won a Grey Cup with Ricky Ray, like he was the face of Toronto sports for years because of what he was doing with the home runs and stuff. But just average numbers overall in his career.
Alomar would be number one, right? Then maybe Delgado?
Alomar, Halliday, Steve Delgado is my top four. And then I'd probably put Bautista and George Bell.
I dare say Bautista would be in almost anyone's top
Tony
five,
Fernandez,
right?
Too. Yeah, he's right there at the top. I mean, you can kind of put your guys wherever, but to say he's top five I don't think is an outlandish statement at all.
Huh. I love the Sports Illustrated story, and if you want, you should Google this, about how he was drafted by Pittsburgh in the 2000 draft, 20th round, 599th overall. Couldn't catch on, couldn't become a regular. Jays picked him up, I believe, on waivers. Couldn't catch on, and there were some guys coming off injury, and this was going to be his last game in Toronto. They were sending him down to the minors after a couple of years of trying to make it as a regular. And he was sitting there before the game, and he tells a story in Sports Illustrated. I owe everything to Vernon Wells. Vernon Wells came and sat beside me 10 minutes before first pitch, and he understood, and everybody did, that I was going down once these guys got taken off the injured list the next day. And he just said, "How you feeling?" He goes, "All right." And Vernon Wells said, "I was thinking, why don't you swing faster or sooner, not faster, sooner than you ever felt comfortable or you imagined?" And Jose tells the story, goes, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, you've got a good swing. It's just never on time. So whatever you're comfortable with and think your timing's down, why don't you just swing out of your mind like sooner than you've ever thought comfortable or imagined and see how it goes. What do you got to lose?" And Jose said, "I didn't say anything," and he hit me on the leg and he goes, "Have a good game." And he hit two bombs and a double in that game. They didn't send him down, and the rest is history.
Wow.
And it's
really
a phenomenal
cool.
story in Sports Illustrated. I highly recommend you Google it on how he became Jose Bautista. And he says, "I owe most of it to Vernon Wells' advice prior to that one game." We'll take a break here and delve into the Jets audio as they host the Oilers today on TSN 1290 and a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day. That's next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. It is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as they host the Oilers tonight at Bell MTS Place. Full game coverage throughout the day today, including on this hour, the Royal Sports Power Hour. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Jets, is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. And NHL news and notes still to come. We're going to qualify somebody for Hockey Nights in Las Vegas. Just talking about that Vernon Wells Sports Illustrated piece on Jose Bautista, actually. And the quote from Vernon Wells is, "You know what you should..." This is 10 minutes prior to a game when he knew he was getting sent down the next day. I think at like 29 years old or however old he was. "You know what you should do?" So Vernon Wells sits down beside him and says, 10 minutes before first pitch, "You know what you should do? Think about starting as early as you can possibly imagine. So early that it seems ridiculous. And then start even earlier than that. What do you have to lose? If you look like a fool, you look like a fool. It's just one game."
It's somewhat similar to Bob Cameron's golden rule for punting into the wind. Punt it as low as you can into the wind, and then punt it even lower than that. Like, he's just you hold it down. When I teach kids punting into the wind, it's amazing. Like, for them to have to come to an understanding of how low you have to hold it and drive it into the wind, it's a similar type thing. Just to get outside of your comfort box like that, and how much faith he would have. Like, imagine standing at the plate in the bigs, and you're going to be putting all kinds of faith in a swing in early. Like, yeah, that's really neat.
And against every instinct you've had for your whole life. And it goes on. It was just one game. Batista stepped in against Scott Baker in the bottom of the second inning. Okay, he would remember thinking, I'm going to start so early, this will be ridiculous. Baker pitched, and Batista felt as if he started his swing before Baker even let go of the ball. I thought, you want early? I'll show you early. He expected to miss everything, but felt his bat hit the ball. It was more than that, though, because the feeling of hitting a baseball hard, really hard, doesn't feel like anything else in the world. He had two bombs and a double that game, and the rest is history. Interesting. Interesting. I'll tweet that out at Jim Toll Sports as well if you want to read that great story on Jose Batista and a conversation with Vernon Wells. Let's get into the Jets game versus the Oilers and, of course, penalties and faceoffs. We're going to hear from Brad Marchand at NHL News and Notes on what he thinks of the faceoffs. But we'll start with Mr. Blake Wheeler, and he was asked yesterday after practice about the penalties called in Monday's game.
Yeah, before the game, it was brought up, but not before that. Clearly, they're putting a premium on that in the preseason, so I would expect that to kind of subside a little bit as we go along here, because spending half the game on special teams isn't good for anyone.
It ain't. Ottawa-Toronto, 7 power plays for Ottawa, 8 for Toronto in the second time up. Like, everybody, right across the board, man, it doesn't really matter where you're looking, there's just a remarkable number of power plays going on. Maybe Detroit-Boston with the very fewest with 9 total during the course of that game, but it's just get prepared again for more or less a special teams practice again tonight.
And it, like, I can totally understand his frustration there and any player's frustration with it, but adapt or die. You have to think these guys will figure it out nearing the end of the preseason.
Can't check with your stick. Period. End of story, huh? And hey, man, when they go play international, Wicks, they figure it out pretty quick. Game or two.
After the first couple of games, usually.
Yeah.
So also Wheeler was, and we're going to get into the faceoffs as well, but he was also asked on the intent of the referees with the slashing calls in the NHL.
Yeah, I think, you don't want to, there's nothing worse than, I got one last night even on my thumb, there's nothing worse than having a slash on your hand when you're trying to shoot. You know, that's opposite momentum going against each other, and those don't feel very good. So, yeah, I think the intent's right. You know, there's some plays where when you're smart and your stick's low enough, you don't want to take that away from guys if they're strong enough to win a stick battle. You know, you don't want to take that away. But if somebody has a clear break at the net and, you know, they're getting up on the hands to try to prevent them from having a scoring chance, then I think it's a good rule.
Wheeler with a real nice rush in that first preseason game, a coast-to-coast one with the patented, although it was his off-wing, hard move inside towards the net and damn near slid it in. But you'd think of all the players, like the guys like Wheeler, right, who utilize speed, use that strength, come inside with that. He'll be one of the guys that benefit the very most from this sort of heightened awareness, or at least putting these into effect.
And you know why he didn't finish that playoff as he blew by Quincy? He got slashed in the hands. He had the move, he had the open net, just went to tap it in and got the whack right there near the handle. So that's exactly what you want to get rid of if you're the NHL. Well, you have a legitimate scoring chance, an opportunity for excitement, entertainment, get the fans jacked up in the stadium, and then a quick whack is taken away from you, right? Like, any time a scoring chance is taken away illegally, that's when the NHL should really clamp down on some of these calls. And so far, to me at least, that's what they've done so far this preseason.
What's the last Wheeler clip?
And we talked about this as well, but just, you know, well, can the players adjust to the penalty calls that are being made?
I think you have to, the emphasis is on moving your feet. You know, if you're moving your feet, you know, your stick doesn't have to do as much work. So I think that's the emphasis, is set the guidelines, you know, let the players know kind of what it's going to look like. And then from there, get on your horse as fast as you can, because if you're even with the puck, you know, you don't have to get your stick on guys as much. Your feet are doing most of the work, and then that's going to take away from some of the penalties.
Humans always adapt, man. They'll adapt. Boys will adapt.
So will they? Like, let's be honest here. Do we think this is going to continue into the regular season, and how long will that adaptation take? Because it was a story again last night in the Leafs and the game and everything else. Like, what's your feeling on this?
Well, hey, man, it seems like the NHL is serious with this. So, yeah, I think it's going to continue. And absolutely, I think the guys, I think the teams are going to see, even though we'll likely see more penalty calls throughout the season because of it, I would still assume we're not going to see 15, 17 power plays during the course of games. And I think that it'll get cleaned up fairly quickly, 2-3 games sort of thing.
Yeah, I think even by the end of the preseason, maybe the final game of the preseason, you'll see these guys start to figure it out. And I liked Wheeler's point there, and this was, I think, one of the main reasons the Jets have such a poor penalty-taking problem, is that when do you take penalties? When you're out of position, when you're behind the play, and you're not near the puck. If you're right there, you don't need to take a penalty. You don't need to slash somebody if you've either stopped the play or you're right within the body and eliminating the space there. That's kind of the main issue here. So while some people might complain about the slashing and things like that going on, if the Jets and other teams are in proper position, there's no need to take penalties. You don't have to. If you're a good defensive team, you don't have to worry about this increase in penalties, because if you're in the right spots, there's still no need for you to use your stick illegally to try and take the opponent away from the puck.
Yeah, I agree in theory, with that. Yeah. But like every game so far is like this. Like every...
Well, we're 2 games into it, man.
Well, no, I mean every game around the National Hockey League.
Yeah, but
there
but
was
all
10
the teams
games
are 2
last
games
night.
Into it.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. It's not like there's some good defensive teams out there, and every game, every team is being called for this extensively. Like there was 15 penalties again last night.
But I don't think players have played. The majority of people haven't played 2 games.
Yeah,
each.
That's what I'm. JT, yeah. Everyone's played 2 games at the most right now, right? So it's.
So you think
you got
to
be a little bit patient with it? Well, of course they're going to adjust. You have to adjust. You think coaches are going to tolerate giving other teams 10 power plays and all the rest of it? Of course they're going to adjust, man.
Well, that's what I'm asking, because Paul Maurice literally said this is going to happen. And then after the game, he said, well, we talked about it prior to the game. We knew this was going to happen.
What's 1 game?
Okay, I'm just asking, like, the evolution of this. And I don't know if...
Does it happen when Team Canada goes to IOC tournaments? Does it happen?
We're talking about the top 20 players in the world at the Olympics. I'm talking about when rules change in the National Hockey League, there are some guys whose careers end.
Well, that's called Darwinism, and if you're too stupid to keep your stick to yourself, then that should be a fate that you deserve fairly well, no? Are you too stupid, really?
Well, I don't know if it's stupid. It's you might not have the skill set.
Stupid
to
is a stupid does.
Keep
what?
Up or
you don't have the skill. Well, if you don't keep up, an option is no longer reaching out and hacking a guy in the gloves. Skate. You know what, Dano? I like Dano a lot. On that one back check, the 3-on-2, at the end of the play, he was reaching with a stick. He didn't get back in time, but he was gliding on his. He probably could have taken 2 more strides and been in that much better position to possibly stop the goal. But for whatever reason, he stopped skating and was reaching out with his stick. It's going to teach guys to stride to skate, right? That's the whole thing. You just bust your ass and skate.
We'll get into more of the lineup, and we'll hear from Paul Maurice later in the program as well. But up next on The Big Show, TSN 1290, we have your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. Next on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through, it's 780-1290 as TSN 1290 and redtag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending 5 lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We'll supply 2 hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Las Vegas, 4 nights accommodations on the Strip, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m. and 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show, 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Mr. Kevin Olszewski, and 5:15 p.m. p.m. on the afternoon ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph. You can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online. We qualified somebody yesterday online on our TSN 1290 Facebook page. Winners will be announced Monday mornings right here on The Big Show. Our first one was on September 11th, and our next one is September 25th, this coming Monday. And then we'll do one on October 9th, October 23rd, and November 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals. And TSN 1290. Our 12th caller through today and qualifier for the first time on The Big Show on this Wednesday is
Gord Hall.
Gord Hall, congratulations, sir.
Show me the money and roll me snake eyes.
Snake eyes and some cash in your pocket. How are you, Gord?
I'm awesome now, brother.
What would you do with the $1,290 cash if we sent you to Vegas?
Well, you know what? I think I'd be taking my little monster. I think we'd go to check out the Hoover Dam. We got to go look to see if there's any Transformers down there like the movie.
Nice. Oh. That's awesome, man.
So,
how old is your little monster?
He's 10.
Ah, that's a great idea, actually. A little father-son trip and go down and check out some sights.
That'd be my plan, I think.
Have you been to Vegas before?
Yeah, I've been a few times.
Oh, wow. That's nice. And, of course, would you go see a show?
You know what? I think I'd see what's going on out there. I mean, obviously, I'd have to see something that's child-orientated, right?
Some of the Cirque du Soleil is pretty cool with kids, right?
Yeah. Cirque du Soleil or maybe Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, for sure.
Can I just give a quick shout-out? My Lucky Charm, my coworker Michelle, is right beside me. That's how come it rang through.
Sweet.
Oh, really? Michelle? Now she's going to want some of that $1,290 cash for helping you out. Well, you are qualified, Gord, so congratulations. We appreciate you listening to TSN 1290. You get a Jets Gear gift card simply for qualifying, and you're in for our next four grand prize draws. If you don't win, like on the 25th, you're still good, so you don't have to qualify anymore. So congratulations. Enjoy the Jets Gear gift card, and best of luck on Hockey Nights in Vegas.
Right on. Thanks, guys.
Take care, man.
Gord Hall, our latest qualifier. Congratulations. We'll do it again this morning at 8:15 here on The Big Show. And then, of course, 12:15 on the Don Vito Roundtable and 5:15 on the Afternoon Ride, which will be live from Boston Pizza City Place today because it's a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Oilers tonight. Head coach Paul Maurice faced the media yesterday. And we have the lineups out. We'll get into that as well that you'll see tonight at Bell MTS Place. Steve Mason will get the start and expect to see Tyler Myers. And here is what Paul Maurice is looking for from Tyler Myers.
Just minutes. Just get out there. There won't be an assessment of his play. His practices are outstanding. Right? He's moving. He's pushing hard in the conditioning drills. He's just got to get back touching the puck. He's real eager.
You just kind of wonder, right? Like, how is we wondered it when for a couple of years when they acquired him. You got Trouba, Byfuglien, Myers, all on the same side. By all appearances, none of them want anything to do with the left side or can't play the left side. So how do you manage that? And if Tyler Myers stays healthy, it makes it that much more interesting. And boy, oh boy, this decor, it's going to be really neat to see how Paul Maurice manages this. If everyone stays healthy, it's a fantastic luxury to have that it's so deep. And you just kind of knock on wood because certainly if they're the Jets decor deserves a real fortunate year, similar to what we're seeing here with the Bomber O-line, as I knock on wood, where you got the same guys going every single game. Boy, if they can have that same sort of thing going with the decor, it'd be great.
Also from Paul Maurice, head coach of the Winnipeg Jets here, how he feels Tyler Myers was missed last year.
Minutes that got added on to other players' game. Buffing troops and minutes are up, and part of that was the schedule that we were under. So we got a lot of heavy minutes on guys with no recovery after he went down. And then execution on all parts, kills penalties, plays on the power play some, and we run him against the other team's best. When the other team's best, it's got a lot of speed. So we missed him in all parts.
And then Mr. Maurice had this to say about competition on the blue line, including with Mr. Myers back in the lineup.
Looking forward to the chemistry that develops, right? So we have an idea where the pair start. Some of that is because we've seen it. and then the changes. Tyler Myers is going hard. We got to get him on the ice. I mean, if he looks as good as in 2 weeks as he looks today, he's got to get can't sit in the 5-6 minutes. He's got to get out there and play. And so then there is some driving competition there for sure.
Tyler Myers has not had a year in the NHL, and he's had 10 of them where he's been even close to under 20 minutes. At 21-19 in 12-13 is the lowest he's ever. And you look the last 4 years here, 25-04, 23-49, 22-37, 22-12. Like, we're talking about Trouba getting 25 probably. And then, of course, you got Buff, and then you got Myers. That's how do you manage that?
I don't know. I don't know. I really don't. I mean, there's just no way you can have three right-handed defensemen playing 20 minutes a night each. It just doesn't add up. So I just don't think there's a way. I think early on, Tyler Myers is kind of the odd man out, which I think is probably the best case for him, to be totally fair. I mean, he's coming off major surgery, and he hasn't played a game since November the 11th. So I wouldn't even want to be thinking about giving him 20-plus minutes a night to start off the season, just kind of ease the big guy into it. And I guess after that, you kind of go by merit and by who's playing the best. But if Jacob Trouba plays like he did last season, and if Dustin Byfuglien plays like he did in the second half of last season, that's both better than Tyler Myers, even at full strength. So I know he wants to, but I just don't foresee a way that Myers gets over 20 minutes to start the season. It might be a while before he gets 20 minutes a game. Might take an injury as well.
Well, that's the other thing is, I mean, this is a great 6D-man. And you throw in Ben Sherratt add in Ben Sherratt and Tucker Poolman. And Poolman, I thought, looked pretty good. It's only been one game. And if an injury comes up, like, this is a great problem to have, as we've discussed extensively. 473 games in the National Hockey League for Tyler Myers. And I guess, you know, if it could be out 20 minutes each, because that's a hockey game. But I know that, like, I think nights when they take 6-7 penalties, he's playing 20-22. I think there's nights where he might play 14. Depends on how everybody's going, where it's at, injuries, everything like that. But what a great problem to have, finally.
And especially, like, how are they going to use them on special teams? When Maurice has come out and said Buff, you know, is not going to be on the penalty kill, and then you wonder, well, does Buff give you the best option from a power play perspective with the Winnipeg Jets? And even that's, I think that's, there's a valid question. There's a question there to be asked. And you, was it you, Wick, saying that you didn't think Ehlers should be on the top power play yesterday? You thought maybe Perreault on that right wall. And one reason for sure why I think Ehlers should be on that top power play is for zone entry. There is nobody better than Nikolaj Ehlers for zone entry on the team. And that's the weakest spot probably for the power play.
We'll talk with Voice of the Jets, Paul Edmonds, next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Bertrand Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. Puck drops at 7 with Mr. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns, Kevin Olszewski. Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live at 6 from BP City Place. Here on Windows postgame show live from Boss Pizza City Place with Mr. Olszewski and friends as well. Afternoon Ride will be down there. And we're going to delve into it a little bit more here on the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and Mr. Paul Edmonds, the voice here, Winnipeg Jets, right here on TSN 1290. And this segment with Paul is brought to you by GoChase Chevrolet and McPhillips, where for the month of September, get 0% financing on most vehicles and get a Vegas vacation for two included. GoChase Chevrolet, 1400 McPhillips at Inkster. Mr. Paul Edmonds, how are you today?
I'm good, Jimmy.
Have you ever been to Vegas?
No, I've landed there a couple times in my old hockey days in the U.S. They had a Southwest hub there, so we had to land there and switch planes every once in a while. what I found was interesting is you get off to switch planes at the airport, and there's one-armed bandits right there at the terminal. So if you have to feed your your desires and your habits as you get off the plane before you get down to the strip. You can do that, or if you got to get a couple last-minute gambles in before you get on your plane to leave, you can do that as well. But no, I've never set foot on the strip. Looking forward to it when the Jets are there.
I've seen those one-arm bandits on my way out where I'm like, I have $4.30 in American left. Should I just – this could decide whether I get on this plane or not. Let's do it.
Yeah. I wonder what the payout rate is for one-armed bandits at the airport in Vegas.
Yeah, I would imagine it's the same as anywhere else, except it just means more when you're getting on a plane. Let's get into tonight's game. The roster's out. Michael Hutchinson, Steve Mason are the goaltenders, and of course, Jets fans will get their first look at Steve Mason in a Jets uniform tonight.
Yeah, I think certainly for the second game in a row, a lot of eyes will be on the goaltender position, certainly from the standpoint that we saw Connor Hellebuyck and how well he played. And I thought he played real well the other night. He was square to the puck. He looked like he was in good space. He was fighting to see through to make saves. I thought his rebound control was real good. So same thing tonight for Steve Mason. You know, it's not his, I guess, official Jets debut, but it's the first time we get to see him in game action. And he's the guy that's been anointed the number one goaltender. So I would imagine there's still going to be some fight for that. There'll be a fight for him to keep that position. But I don't think you sign a guy, and Paul sort of hinted toward that he'll be the guy come early October when they face the Toronto Maple Leafs. So we'll get an opportunity to see him. Michael Hutchinson will back him up. I think it will be similar to what we saw just the other night. And depending on how much action he gets, that being Steve Mason, will determine whether he goes the full game or not. So eyes will be on him as well, and then a few other positions. So that's what this is all about, these preseason games, is for guys to win some jobs, some guys to bang off some rust, and for us to really assess what the organization did in the offseason, and if the holes are indeed filled to an appropriate level for this team to move forward into the playoffs and maybe beyond as this season goes forward.
17 power plays in game one. Paulie, and looking at the games the last couple of nights, it looks like 15 is about a typical number early on here during preseason. Your thoughts on what the league and officials are trying to put into effect and whether or not you think they hold course during the regular season?
Yeah, I don't know about that last part. This will be some pretty frustrating hockey to watch if you're sitting here in the middle of November and there's still 15, 16, 17, 18 power plays combined for the two teams. Blake Wheeler spoke about it yesterday. He said it's not much fun to play in because you're not really getting into the rhythm of things. Certainly either you're on the power play or you're on the penalty kill, and there's not a lot of five-on-five play. You know, if you're scoring power play goals, I guess it's great, but he also said it wasn't probably much fun for the fans to watch. So I think everybody will tolerate it until a couple of things happen. The players adjust very quickly, and then we don't have these infractions or the necessity of the officials to call them, or the officials will come off this a little bit in how stringent they're calling this, and we don't see as many calls directed in the slash and in the holding department as we certainly did the other day, and we were eyewitness to. But it can't continue this way. Listen, we all want to take that two-handed slash out of the game on the hands that broke Matthew Perreault's thumb last year from Corey Perry, or the one that Sidney Crosby gave Mark Methot. I mean, those are dangerous, and it keeps guys, good players, out for a significant period of time. But at the same time, I mean, if you're down on a stick blade, unless you break the shaft of the stick, I think that you should be allowed to kind of give a little bit of a shot there. I mean, there's obviously a bit of a gray area. You know, how far up the shaft of the stick are you going to allow? But, I mean, this is what we saw the other day. It's just an edict that's come down, and they're just calling everything, and they're trying to really set a precedent so that the players have all of the preseason to adjust so that, you know, they are the ones that are really calming this thing down before you get to the regular season. But I cannot see it continue this way. And if it does, you're going to hear the vocal fans kind of speak up in the forums that they have about what they're seeing on the ice and the fact that they probably don't like the fact that each team is getting 9 power plays per game.
Paul, along with the regulars that are going to be in the lineup that we saw on Monday night, we're also going to get a look tonight at Dmitry Kulikov. Matt Hendricks is going to be in the lineup. Nick Patan, Josh Morrissey, Jack Roslovic, Sammy Niku, as well as Tyler Myers. Paul Maurice was talking yesterday about the defense corps and bringing in Tyler Myers as he's considering it like a free agent as after only playing 11 games. How do you see this depth amongst the blue line playing out minutes-wise?
Well, he was asked about that, and he said that if he can get sort of everybody to, you know, around 25, that would be optimum. I don't know. I mean, to go back to our last question and answer, if you get into this power play situation and it continues into the regular season, there's going to be a lot of guys, like, for instance, Kyle Connor the other day, didn't see a lot of ice time because he's getting to the end of the bench and ready to go, and then there's a power play or a penalty kill, and he's not playing in those situations. So, you know, like this situation, I don't know how the depth. We know who are going to be the six guys for sure, and probably we're in a pretty good area of speculating who might be the seventh defenseman on the team, and that's probably going to be a Ben Chiarot. But, you know, how are you going to divvy up these minutes? I'm really interested to see that. I mean, all of these pairs could play a significant amount of time on their own. So now you've got two other pairs that that want to command that kind of ice time as well. So this will be interesting. But I think you can pinch off a couple of minutes off Dustin Byfuglien and maybe Toby Enstrom and share those around. But one thing for sure is the depth on the blue line is as good as it's ever been. And I guess we'll let this play out to see exactly how they manage these minutes and manage the players. So, you know, is maybe Jacob Trouba going to get a little bit more penalty kill time? For sure. Is Tyler Myers maybe? And that's where you can garner some minutes for these guys as well. But that's a question for me, to see how this all breaks down in-game and how they share the 60 minutes available to three solid pairs, in my opinion, on the blue line for the Winnipeg Jets.
Paulie, what do you think the ceiling is for Adam Lowry?
Well, Paul was asked about that too, and you know, he scored 15 goals last year, and he scored even more in his career in St. John's in the AHL. So, you know, that's a good question, Westy, because, I mean, is it 20? Is it 25 goals? I'm sure that they would like to see Adam Lowry be in around that same mark and maybe a little bit higher to get to the 20-goal mark. Certainly be a real good defender as a third-line center, be a guy that you can entrust with going out and shutting down one of the top lines on the opposition. Certainly play a little bit of penalty kill time and some power play time as he did last year in front of the net. I don't know if he's going to get much of that this year, or at least to start. But at the same time, win some faceoffs and be a real reliable guy in the middle of the ice. So I think we haven't seen the entire potential of Adam Lowry so far in his career with the Winnipeg Jets. So I think there's a little bit more there in his toolbox that he can open up and deliver over the course of his career. And, you know, I think we're going to see that sooner than later because he's certainly working his way into his mid-20s. But I don't just yet. And what that is, I'm not quite sure. But if the Winnipeg Jets got 20 goals out of him every year and felt that he was a very responsible third-line center and that he could play in all situations and they entrusted him to do that, I think then it's a win-win for Adam as a player and then certainly for the Jets as an organization with that particular player.
What do you expect from the Oilers tonight? Their lineup, of course, hard to tell, but everybody's talking about them. Favored to win the Stanley Cup. Who do you think they're bringing to town tonight?
I would imagine if things run true, and you have to have a certain number of veterans, that they're not going to bring a vaunted lineup here. They'll bring some guys, at least on the road, that they want to have a look at. Their question marks, bubble players for sure. So I guess, you know, it doesn't really matter. We looked at the lineup that Minnesota brought up here and kind of went, oh, I don't know, this looks like the Iowa Wild here, with the exception of a few names like Ryan Malone and Tyler Ennis and Charlie Coyle, and they ended up beating the Winnipeg Jets in that shootout. And forget the skills competition there. I mean, they tied the game up a little bit late, and you know, it was a pretty well-played game for a first exhibition game. So I think we're going to see something similar. It'll be whatever it will be tonight. It will be a up-and-down game with some speed because the Oilers play that game and so do the Winnipeg Jets. So who's ever there will have to keep up, and that will be certainly the great equalizer for players that might be on the bubble, whether you can keep up to the pace of the game, especially with the Winnipeg Jets throwing out their top six forwards out there again for the second game in a row. So I would imagine that you'll see a lineup with the Edmonton Oilers that will have some star power to it, but you'll see a lot of names that you probably don't recognize that are trying to make the team or fit in the organization somewhere, similar to what we saw with Minnesota the other night.
It wasn't an issue in Game 1, but last night certainly sort of reared up this whole situation now. The league with the face-off at the dot, two guys get tossed out. That equals a minor penalty. You got Brad Marchand coming out speaking strongly against it. Your take on that new rule?
Well, I think what you're trying to do is cut down on the cheating on face-offs, but that's been going on since the dawn of time here, and I can remember, you know, guys getting in, leaning in, however they want to get their stick, and then dropping the puck. And I think a part of it is, too, that you go back a few years and the league or hockey wanted to quicken up, you know, the pace of the game. So it was this quick face-off rule. Well, you know, then you had the linesman not being able to sort of police where he wanted the sticks lined up and where the feet were supposed to line up on that tee for the players that were taking the face-off. So, you know, it's kind of been a situation that's been created by that, and now they're trying to correct that or rectify it. So, you know, do I have a problem with it? I don't know. I mean, let's just get two guys in there and drop the puck and let's go. I mean, there has to be some sort of parameters on where you stand and where your stick should be. And again, I hearken back to our first discussion here about how many penalties were called the other night in the slashing and the holding, that if you set this in motion right now, the centermen will adjust to what they have to do and have those brackets of what is within the rule and what they can do. And if they don't do it, then there's going to be somebody tossed out, and then further there will be a minor penalty. So you start handing out minor penalties to teams in the regular season on faceoffs, I can tell you that the coaching staff, it's going to filter down to the center icemen, and they're going to make an adjustment real quick. So I don't really have a problem with it, other than the league created this with the fast faceoff rule, in my opinion, a few years back, and now they're trying to correct it and make it a little bit more fair for everybody.
We'll see
how long it lasts.
I was going to say, I can't imagine giving a penalty for this come playoff time.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, more so than you don't see the official throwing the second guy out. Right? Like, that's because that's how no penalty's called. If you get tossed, you're getting the penalty.
Well, that's what I mean. I can't.
You know, I think you guys are onto something. I think you'll probably end up seeing the first guy tossed, and then the second guy will have to come in, and then it will be a real quick puck drop so that you don't have to set anybody up. But
yeah, and how
you're
many?
Right. I mean, what would be the implications of calling a penalty on this in a playoff game in the third period?
Paulie, even during the regular season, I'll love to see, the second guy coming in for the faceoff is probably going to have a win percentage of about 20%.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's going to be so passive in there. Yeah.
You know, the other one, too, guys, is I don't think we're going to see as many of the reviewable offside calls this year because, you know, there's a penalty. If you challenge an offside call and you're wrong, you're going to get stuck with a minor penalty this year. So
that's good.
I think what they've done is abolished the ridiculousness that we saw in the playoffs last year through this with, you know, the skate might be a millimeter off the ice or just outside of the blue line or whatever it is. I mean, it just got so ridiculous last year. It was kind of hard to watch. It was frustrating as well. So that's another rule, too, is we're not going to see the challenges on offside with the frequency we did last year. Because if you're wrong, you're going to be assessed a minor penalty.
Great stuff, Paul. Have a great call tonight. We look forward to hearing it on TSN 1290.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you later. Talk to you next week.
Thanks so much, brother. Take care, man.
The voice of the Jets, Mr. Paul Edmonds, with us here on the Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour. NHL news and notes are next, and we will hear from Brad Marchand and his thoughts on this new rule when the Big Show returns to TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Not Auto Corps present the Blue Bus before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season. We're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Not Auto Corps VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you and five buddies up from a starting destination.
drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes 6 tickets to an upcoming Blue Bomber home game and free transportation to and from. Enter to win now at TSN1290.ca. More Jets talk and NHL talk coming up at the top of the hour with Jared Clinton from the Hockey News, but we talked about it. New face-off rules concerning stick and skate placements. Here's what the Boston Bruins' Brad Marchand thinks of the new rules.
This face-off rule is an absolute joke. That's how you ruin the game of hockey by putting that in there. So they're going to have to do something about that because we can't play this year like that. That's brutal. Basically, you have to be a statue. I mean, you can't move. It takes away from the center iceman. And, you know, I think even there was a play last night where there was a penalty given, and then it was 4-4 before the penalty even started just because of a draw. You know, like, that's just a joke.
Ruin the game of hockey. Settle down, little fella. I don't know. Like, hey, how about you? You know, ultimately, how about you just play within the rules of the game and keep your skates and everything where you're supposed to be? I know that this they're kind of making the NHL. The fans have always had a problem with the officials not dropping the puck, not where the guys taking the face-offs were situated. But I do like it from a, hey, these are the rules of the game standpoint, and you operate within them, or that's that sort of thing.
Brad Marchand's just really frustrated because he can't spear or slew foot the new face-off rule. So there's a little bit of added just angst in there. Is this not peak NHL? A rule that nobody complains about, that nobody cares about, and they try and fix something. That realistic, like, what impact does this have on the game?
Well, and that's what I think he's referencing from ruining the game of hockey. Like, there's nothing wrong. Like, what's wrong with face-offs and tossing guys?
And you know what's – me and Troy were kind of talking about this before.
Well, lots is wrong with tossing guys,
But we talked about this. If you asked an average NHL fan, what do you hate about face-offs the most? What do you think they would say?
For sure, it's the delay and drop.
The line's been taking forever to drop the puck. And so what does the NHL go out and do? They potentially increase the delay and then penalize a player for – what are we talking, centimeters here?
You think this will potentially increase it? Won't the centermen now be that much more cognizant of where they're situated and will try and cheat that much less, which will inevitably lead to a quicker puck drop?
I think we're going to get some dumb penalty calls early in the season, and then we'll have idiots on Twitter taking snapshots of players with their skates a centimeter over the line and complaining that the NHL isn't enforcing these rules strict enough. It's just something that nobody cares about and nobody was worried about, and they're trying to fix it. The NHL... Like, what were the main complaints this offseason? The offside review. I guess they might have made their way towards fixing that a little bit, although they didn't really fix the review process in and of itself. They just penalize teams now. It's just another case of the league going out of their way to fix something that didn't need fixing.
Yeah,
fix the goalie equipment.
I wonder, like, if some players were complaining, or if this was an issue sort of behind closed doors and away from the fans. Like, if you're a real talented center without cheating, and these guys are doing all these sort of, like, isn't this the clutch and the grab at the face-off dot? If you're utilizing all this, if you're encroaching my space and cheating and tying me up in things that aren't legal, and if I've got a gift at the dot and you're helping to reduce that because you're cheating and all over me sort of thing and encroaching, I want my space to win the face-off, man.
Why did it have to change? Why don't you just toss a guy then? If you're not listening, if you're encroaching, you toss him.
Well, they have been tossing a guy forever.
Yeah, but why is it a penalty now?
Well, because they want guys to come into. They're not knowing that there's no screwing around, right? I think we're going to see way fewer guys getting tossed from the face-off dot because of the situation that exists now.
I'm just so excited for it. Can't wait.
Well, you will be, because you'll notice that there'll be less delays at the face-off.
Fix the goalie equipment. Don't take 3 seasons to fix the chest protector to make it thinner. Like, those are the issues.
Sure, they're trying to do that.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. Maybe next decade they'll figure it out.
That's more a manufacturer's thing.
But they're just, the NHL loves to focus on issues nobody cares about. No, I don't care about this rule. I just don't see the need to try and enforce it.
But yet, we said that most fans have a problem with the officials not dropping the puck. This should, in theory, I think, lead to the officials dropping the puck quicker because the guys at the dot are going to be working within the rules.
I don't know. I don't like it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But we'll see.
Brian Boyle of the New Jersey Devils was diagnosed with chronic myeloid leukemia, CML, a rare but treatable type of bone marrow cancer. It's treated with medication. It's in the early stages. Said he experienced fatigue throughout the summer, but chalked that up to becoming a parent again with his wife, Lauren, giving birth to a daughter in May. Quote, I feel as close to normal as can be. In a conference call yesterday with reporters, I'm expecting to live my life, to live a normal life. I believe I'm in good hands. We have a good plan of attack here, and I'm looking forward to getting on the ice and playing. When that happens, I don't know, but my mindset is on October 7th. This is just a sobering story in the National Hockey League for Brian Boyle.
Yeah, and just fortunate you catch it early, right? By all indications here, and there's medication, from my understanding, that you can help to beat this and then hopefully move on forward with life as it was prior to this. So let's hope he gets by this quickly.
We'll take a break when we come back. Jared Clinton of the Hockey News joins us on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day for the Winnipeg Jets as they host the Edmonton Oilers tonight at Bell MTS Place. Full pre- and post-game coverage starting with the Gondola Pizza warm-up, live from BP City Place in the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick Ralph. And then Mr. Kevin Olszewski will have the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live again from Boss Pizza City Place. Puck drops at 7, and then the Huron Windows postgame show also from BP City Place with Mr. Olszewski and friends. Full coverage today as the Oilers come to town.
10 games last night in the NHL. Any guess as to how many slashing penalties are called?
40.
49.
50. Oh, I was going to say 58. I'm not going to pretend like I was going to say 50. 49. Welcome back into the program from the Hockey News, Mr. Jared Clinton. How are you today, sir?
Not too bad of yourself.
Good, thanks. Your thoughts on the slashing calls and the face-off and how everything's gone so far in this preseason for the National Hockey League?
Yeah, I think the general consensus is it's kind of annoying right now. But I think this is a good learning tool for everybody, the fans included right now. You know, I think we saw this back when we came out of the lockout, you know, the crackdown on obstruction calls. We saw so many penalties called, more than ever before. And, you know, it added it up to a boost in offense, which was a good thing. But, I mean, it's a learning curve. It takes a while for everyone to kind of get adjusted to it. And if this is...
You're cutting in and out pretty bad, Jared. No. Are you there?
Yep.
Okay, that's better now.
Kind of sounded like super bad when he was talking to Becky.
I just think this is kind of what's going to be the new normal, at least throughout the preseason here. I think what they're trying to do is kind of establish what the new normal is, and I think this is about as good as a learning ground as you can get, because at least these games don't really mean anything aside from, you know, if you guys trying to make a team right now. If they can get this working, and if they can get a nice middle ground between too many penalties and, you know, none being called, then I think we're going to see kind of an uptick in scoring. And you know what? I think everyone's going to get used to it. After Monday's game, Mike Babcock said, you know, you're not going to have guys kicked out of the faceoff circle and taking penalties for this anymore. And then last night he was frustrated with the calls. So I think even the coaches are learning right now what's kind of going to be normal. So I think the penalties are annoying right now, especially the face-off violations, but we'll start to find, you know, the sweet spot where these things kind of work out, and hopefully it adds up to some more offense.
Jared, what do you think Stan Bowman does about Marian Hossa and the $5.275 million cap hit that's going on with the Chicago Blackhawks and the situation with Hossa?
Yeah, I think right now the hope is that it goes on LTIR. There's been no confirmation one way or the other right now that that's going to be the case. I think it's safe to assume it will be, though, because without the NHL saying anything otherwise right now, I think it's probably safe to say that the Blackhawks aren't going to get blindsided and have to deal with that cap hit or stomach that cap hit for the entire season. And once that goes on the LTIR, it opens up a whole lot of options. Chicago needs some defense. They need some defense bad. Right now, I think they've got five guys for under one-way contracts. But one of those is Michael Roosevelt, and he's out for the year. So they've got another hole to fill. Not that Roosevelt was really more than a warm body right now. But I think what they're going to do is probably bring Franzen in. He played pretty well last night in that Chicago-Columbus game. So I think he's going to get a look, even if it's just on a one-year deal for, you know, a limited salary. But they'll probably bring him in. And I think the other option after is maybe bringing a depth forward. You know, the Blackhawks are relying on a lot of young players lately. I think ideally what they do, and I think Quenneville's a big fan of, bringing in someone with some veteran presence. You know, we've had guys like Andrew Desjardins play there in the last couple of years as a third, fourth line guy. And I think they don't really have that option right now. They've brought Drew Miller and John Mitchell into camp. And I think one of those guys is probably, you know, got the inside track on a short-term deal in Chicago if that cap space opens up.
Jared, you had a piece on Mikko Koivu getting an extension with Minnesota announced just prior to puck drop here Monday in Winnipeg. Your thoughts on this, and is it a pay cut for him at that age?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the contracts other guys his age are signing, and they're not really taking any pay cuts. You know, Justin Williams took pretty much an equal salary. He's a year younger, but took an equal salary on a two-year deal to go to Carolina right now. So, you know, guys his age aren't really taking pay cuts. They can still produce. You know, you do look at him as a 33-year-old. He's going to be signed now until he's 37. He'll be 37 when the contract ends. So earning $5.5 million per season at 37 isn't too shabby, but I think overall the pay cut really is more his willingness to sacrifice a little bit on his own end in order for this team to win. You look at what they've got right now. Minnesota's window might be more open right now than it has ever been. You know, you talk about Bruce Boudreau's struggles in the playoffs, and you know that is a bit concerning that he's had those, but eventually every coach gets over those humps, and you know eventually he'll just have a team that's able to do that, or at least one would figure he has a team that's able to do that. I think the good thing about Koivu's contract right now is it's 2 years. It gives him a chance to win. It goes into, hopefully it doesn't go into, but there's a good chance it goes into another lockout. So that third year or that 38-year-old season won't really be a problem if that's the case. But, you know, over the next 2 years, it allows Minnesota to bring back and keep a lot of the talent that they have on that team. You know, Zucker's coming up, Dumba's coming up. Those are guys you want to get under contract if you're going to build a team that can actually compete for the Stanley Cup, not just a playoff spot. So I think for both team and player, it's about as good a deal as you can get.
Jared, what level, how high does Austin Matthews bring his game? What height this year?
I mean, so statistically, goals-wise, you don't think he can go much higher. But, you know, we probably didn't think he would score 40 goals last year either. So I think it's safe to assume he's going to take a step forward, maybe 40 goals again, but up that assist total because he only had 29 last year. So if he puts up somewhere in the 80-point realm, I wouldn't be too shocked. I think the biggest thing for him is going to be proving, you know, from start to finish that he can be everything, not just an offensive forward, because we know he can produce offensively. But I think the thing that's really going to make him a really special player is if he can really round out his defensive game and prove he can be a center that drives play and scores goals. I think if he becomes one of those true number ones, a guy not too unlike Crosby in the sense that he's got that defensive aspect to his game, I think that's a really, really big win for the Maple Leafs. I honestly could see him doing it this season too. He just seems like he's got everything right now, and that's a good thing for Toronto.
It's going to be interesting who the Oilers bring to town tonight. What are your thoughts on them and expectations for this year, and what do you expect to see in the lineup this evening?
The Hockey News projected the Oilers to make the Stanley Cup final this season.
I saw that.
And I think you look at what the Oilers had or have as a team, and it's just, it doesn't strike you maybe as the most deep team, but the high-end talent is just there. And the thing that I think a lot of people are maybe sleeping on or overlooking right now is that there's a good chance Jesse Puljujärvi makes this roster this season. And if he makes that roster, that's another offensive weapon added to their coffers. And, you know, we look at the Oilers and we think, you know, they didn't really do a ton in the offseason. But adding guys like Puljujärvi, bringing in Ryan Strome, who's got some offensive ability too, makes that team even more dangerous with the puck on their sticks. And I think that's a scary thought, especially in a division like the Pacific that is, you know, not really that strong up top. So the Oilers can probably get a number one or number two seed and home ice advantage for at least a round. I think as far as the roster goes tonight, it's anyone's guess. I imagine Puljujarvi will be in the lineup. I think we're going to see Strome in the lineup. I think it's all the guys that they want to take a look at right now. This is just a team that has so many options and so much potential if they hit it all. I think the one big thing that's the X factor for the Oilers this season is whether or not Draisaitl can carry his own line. And if he carries his own line and plays a part for McDavid and produces like he did in the postseason, then this is really a team that everyone should be watching out for.
Jared, if my count is right here, 10 PTOs involved in the Red Wings camp, 11 of them with the Kings. Across the league, are there a couple guys with PTOs that you're expecting to make some noise?
Yeah, well, I'd already mentioned Cody France, and I think he's one guy who should really be, you know, the focus of this kind of PTO conversation, because I think he's the one who's probably got the clearest shot at landing a job. The one guy who's really interesting, mentioned Detroit, is they brought in P.A. Parenteau, and you know, he's bounced around the league quite a bit. Advanced stats fans love the guy. He can produce, you know, those possession numbers that those people tend to love. He can also chip in offensively. You know, he's been consistent scoring. The one thing about him, though, is especially in Detroit, there's no money for him. There's nowhere to sign him. So the interesting thing with him is, does he impress someone else, or do the Red Wings rather find somehow some way to bring him in? I think with a guy like him, you probably look for him to score a couple goals in the preseason if he's going to get a look anywhere else. And if he doesn't, then you wonder what his options are. Other guys out there, you know, I mentioned Chicago again, Drew Miller and John Mitchell. Chicago's going to be looking for depth forwards. Toronto has Roman Polak coming to camp, although that seems to be more of a goodwill thing with Polak, you know, giving him a shot to prove he can play somewhere else in the league. You know, there's some interesting players out there that are on PTOs. There's really nobody too interesting in Winnipeg, sadly. But, you know, around the league, we've got some guys.
And speaking of that, what do you think the chance of Ryan Malone making the Minnesota Wild is?
Yeah, he's an interesting case. The one thing about Malone is it seems to be that his goal, and no one can fault him for it, his goal is really just to make the AHL club. And the point of that is if he signs an AHL-only deal, then he can potentially land a spot on the American Olympic team. And I think that's not a bad goal for someone who's been out of the game for a couple of years now. You know, he didn't look out of place or too out of place playing on Monday night. So, you know, hopefully for him, he gets a shot at a little bit of redemption or another shot at continuing his career here and can play in the Olympics, something he's never been able to do.
Yeah, it should be interesting with all the PTOs, but that's sort of nice of Bruce Boudreau to give him a penalty shot or a shootout shot there. And I agree, I thought he looked okay, like he didn't for a guy who's been out of the game for so long. Jared, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks for doing this and enjoy your day.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys.
Thanks so much, Jared.
Jared Clinton of the Hockey News here on The Big Show. Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
You heard the man, 12th caller through at 780-1290, TSN 1290 and redtag.ca, presenting Hockey Nights in Vegas. Five lucky listeners on their way to Sin City this November the 10th, T-Mobile Arena, Las Vegas Golden Knights, Winnipeg Jets. Two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Las Vegas, four nights accommodations right on the Strip, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays, 7:15 and 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show, 12:15 on the Don Vito Roundtable, and weekdays in the afternoon at 5:15 on the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick Ralph. Also, bonus chances to qualify on our social media, so stay tuned to that online. Winners will be announced again. Our next grand prize winner, we have our first one, will be September 25th and the 9th and 23rd of October, and our final grand prize draw will be on November the 6th. All the information is right at tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and TSN 1290.
Vegas Golden Knights are 2-0. I think they beat Colorado last night 4-1. They beat Vancouver 9-4. That had to be one of the most bizarre scores ever. An expansion team goes into Vancouver and puts up 9 goals. Vancouver gets 4. Like 13 goals in a preseason game from an expansion team. And
awesome stuff, huh?
It's, yeah.
Looking sharp as the Dickens and the white unis. Jay and Dan were all over them.
You know what?
Saying how ugly they looked.
I know you guys said that on Monday, you like the white gloves and stuff. And then I kind of looked at them again yesterday, and I tend to agree. I don't really like them. I'm not.
Well, poo on you.
It's interesting how, you know, uniforms can strike you.
There's magic in them gloves, man. It's a sweet mix.
I don't mind the uniforms and the logo. Uh-huh. The gloves, though, I don't know. I don't like. It's like the white skates. Remember when the white skates came in?
Yeah. Well, the white skates were a fashion faux pas of enormous magnitude and all the layers of paint on them, right? Infamous, yes. Certainly.
Indeed. Our 12th caller through and second qualifier of the morning is Mr. Rewicki.
It's Mike Pajic.
Mike Pajic, congratulations, sir. Just for qualifying, you get a Jets Gear gift card, and you're now in for our next 4 grand prize draws for Golden Knights and Jets, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. Of course, 4-night stay, return airfare, hockey tickets, and $1,290 cash.
Good luck, Pager.
It is a Birch Ridge Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as they host the Oilers tonight, 7 o'clock. Bell MTS Place, and in the lineup today will be Mr. Jack Roslovic, one of the young players that'll be on the lineup facing the Oilers tonight. And head coach Paul Maurice had this to say about Mr. Roslovic.
Jack's a really, really good pro. He's just outstanding fitness numbers, really off the charts. And he's learning that game at center ice. We liked his game that he played for us when he came in, and he had a long fruitful year in the American Hockey League, and he'll continue to do that. We'll get him in some exhibition games here, and you can give him a chance to maybe run back-to-back and get some bigger minutes and some power play time, especially in that game 3 and 4. All those young guys who are power play guys, they'll get that opportunity then, so they'll get to show some offense that they have. And Jack, you know, for him, every day is another step closer to the NHL. We have lots of confidence in it. When that day finally arrives, it may not be a straight line that you get to the NHL and stay there forever, but he's on the right path for sure.
So Jack Roslovic will get some power play time. The young guys going forward, we talked about that yesterday with Kyle Connor and why he wasn't on the man advantage. One game last year at the end of the season, his hometown of Columbus against the Blue Jackets. 65 games last year at the Moose, 48 points, 13 goals. 22 penalty minutes. Your thoughts on Jack Roslovic, and does he legitimately have a shot at making this team in your mind?
No, I think we just heard Paul Maurice put absolutely squash that thought. He just basically said he'll be back down with them, and like I can't remember the exactness of what he said, but he absolutely just said there that he will not be with the big club. So he'll be going back down and another year to sort of grow here, and real interesting to try and figure out where he fits, and ultimately, will he push Adam Lowry down to the fourth line? And will it just be because of the extension to Brian Little here, it's going to be really neat to see what happens with Roslovic, Lowry, the impact of the moving around. Will it be center that he plays when it comes? It'll be very interesting.
Well, and I think you kind of touched on it there. What I was going to say is if he plays center in the A, he's playing center in the show. Like that, teams will generally try and work their prospects into the roles they eventually want them to play in the National Hockey League. So I would expect Roslovic to play center in the A. And, man, you wonder if he puts up – if he improves and gets to – a point a game over the course of a whole season, because he was at that around the halfway mark and then just kind of slowed down as the season progressed. But if he's able to get you 70 points in about 70 games this year, you really wonder. And at the very least, it might not be third line minutes next year, but it could be kind of an even split between a Lowry line and a Roslovic line going into next season.
Head coach Paul Maurice was also asked about Kyle Connor and talked about how with the penalties in the game and his, you know, lack of ice time because of that on Monday night,
how he and other young players basically can sort of get their ice time.
It's a challenge for everybody making that adjustment, right? They'll come from their junior teams and their college teams where they're 20-minute guys and on long shifts, right? A minute's nothing for them. And they get here and it's the exact opposite. The last night's not a great indication of what you, how you'd like to use a guy. Our priority in the first two games is getting a lot of our bigger guys into the game feel, and then we'll get some of the younger guys in over the next two. But that's a job that they got to learn, right? And they got to learn how to keep their legs and come off the bench. It's not easy. That's why those guys in the bottom six, when they get a little older, and they always say they're great pros, right? They just kind of, they can sit for 12 and go out there, and they understand their job, that there's no sympathy for them. They don't get the shift off because of it. It's a challenge for the young men. It's all part of maturing and becoming a pro.
Thing is, though, the guys that are sitting on the bench, veteran or not, typically are sitting on the bench. There's not a whole lot of production that's expected of you on the ice if you're spending a bunch of time on the bench, and that's not the case with Kyle Connor. It's expected he's going to be productive, and when you're talking about the amount of time on the bench, for him to only have put up 3 minutes and 19 seconds with 2 minutes and 35 seconds left in the second period, that was astonishing. Just waiting for him to come out, waiting and waiting. And I know that the power play and the penalty kill played a huge role, and Paul Maurice found a spot on him out there for him on the penalty kill later in that game. But you got to wonder, I wonder anyway, coming into this game tonight with it was such a small amount of time he was out on the ice. Do they have him out there on the second team power play tonight? I'm going to guess that they do, to try and get him some more minutes. And without Lowry in the lineup tonight, it'll be interesting to see. Is he going to be beside Roslovic tonight?
Yeah, I think I agree. I think Connor gets some power play time tonight as well. This is from the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Just announced minutes ago they have released international receiver TJ Thorpe from the practice roster, and Ed Tate just adding in from bluebombers.com. Thorpe had given the Bombers good production, but essentially lost his starting job when Timothy Flanders was added to the offense. So Thorpe has been released by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. We'll take a break, talk some more hockey when Gus Katsaros joins us next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to The Big Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, a half an hour away from your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line. Very interested to get your thoughts on the new rules being, I guess, called in the National Hockey League, in the faceoff circle, the slashing, everything else. We heard from Blake Wheeler today about it, Paul Maurice. On the Boston Pizza fan line, get your thoughts on the lineup tonight. We'll get into that as well. Of course, Jose Bautista in his final series at home with the Jays, if you want to weigh in on that. And anything Mr. Gus Katsaros would like to talk about. And the Goldeyes tonight. Of course, Game 5, the American Association Final. A champion will be decided at Shaw Park between the Wichita Wingnuts and the Winnipeg Goldeyes. And Wayne, congratulations. He won our two tickets to tonight's Game 5 between the Goldeyes and the Wingnuts at Shaw Park. So stay tuned or enjoy that. And thanks for listening, Wayne. It's a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day, of course. Most of us will be at Bell MTS Place for the Jets and the Oilers preseason action. Puck drop, 7 o'clock. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns with the call. Talk more hockey with us now from McKean's Hockey, our good friend Gus Katsaros. Good morning, Gus.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys, ready for the NHL season?
We are, and I'm wondering if you've been called for slashing or have been tossed out of a face-off circle yet?
Well, I figured over the course of the summer, my wife's been calling me for slashing, so I'm way ahead of the curve on this one. So
you're used to the penalty minutes and everything else. What are your impressions of how it's been called and enforced in this preseason, and do you see it continuing into the regular season?
Well, I mean, similar to what players and coaches experience in the preseason, which is a little bit of an experimentation phase, this is essentially what I think the officiating crews are doing. They're testing the limits. They're putting it out in an extreme, calling every single situation, I guess, to send a message to the players, to let them know, guys, this is coming down the pipe. We're going to have to call this. You're going to have to adjust your methods in order for us to all live in harmony. Otherwise, there's going to be a situation where you're in a game seven and someone's going to get called for a faceoff violation with a minute left to go, and it's going to decide the Stanley Cup. They don't want it to get to that point. So I think that they're just trying to experiment now, get it into everybody's head of what the expectations are, and hopefully it fades and really, really quick out of the gate.
Hearing that things are maybe starting to heat up with the Matt Duchene situation and possibly Ottawa, do you expect, like if you had to lay chips down and push your chips one way or the other, does he get moved here before the season starts?
Yeah, I can't see him starting. You know, just the way that training camp started and just that it just doesn't seem like it's a reconcilable affair. So the best situation would be try to get it. Have the Avs distance themselves from Duchene as much as possible. And I'm sure that he would welcome a change going somewhere else where he can prove just exactly what he's worth. It's a nice fresh start both ways. If it ends up being Ottawa, so be it. It would be an interesting fit. It would be a pretty good, having Turris and Duchene 1 and 2, that's a pretty decent combo down the middle. So I would figure that the Avs want to get this done as quick as possible, and I can't see this lasting going into the regular season.
Being that it's taken this long, Gus, does that hurt or help his value? Like, are the Avalanche going to have to sit here and go, okay, well, I guess we'll take this? Or is it more of it's taken this long, who really wants him? Training camps here, who needs him the most?
So with that, I kind of look at the Phil Kessel trade that kind of happened in Toronto. When you're dealing a star, and this is almost entirely true, you are never dealing to get back value. You're just dealing to get back something. You're trying to reclaim assets rather than getting proper value of what your prime asset really is. So I think in this situation, Duchene is just like Kessel, where the Avalanche are just trying to figure out, okay, we're never going to get the type of value we expect out of a player of this caliber. So what can we recoup as assets to at least make a trade palatable to us, our management, and our fans?
Your thoughts on the Demers trade for the whole, like the situation with Coyotes and the Panthers, and do you like the move by the Panthers?
I'm not really sure. From the perspective of just having a body in a roster spot, I mean, they could have made, they potentially could have scoured and probably made a better choice in the NHL. I'm sure that there would have been somebody of a better ilk than Jamie McGinn. And it's not that McGinn is a bad player or anything, but he's a depth player. Demers is an impact player. So I would have expected more. And this goes back to what we value, right? If the value of what Florida felt they were getting back fits their needs, goes into their roster, performs as they expected wherever he is slotted, then I guess that they're element of value is fine. On the Coyotes side, well, that was a great addition. I mean, that blue line, who a year ago and maybe 2 years ago was just like woefully undermanned, is now all of a sudden becoming a pretty decent blue line. Mobile, can play with the puck, can support the forwards. So from the Coyotes' perspective, that was a great, great acquisition.
What did you think of Patrick Marleau's debut with the Leafs yesterday?
I only caught the game in spurts.
Okay.
All you see my expectations of Marleau are exactly what you saw in San Jose last year. A speedy, capable forward that's able to either produce offense on his own, support offensively, and, you know, he just adds a veteran presence. I think that's just kind of like a cherry on top, but that's not the prime thing. So my expectations are exactly what I saw in those little spurts. Quick to the puck, supporting his teammates, and essentially just came out for a nice, good skate. Scored a nice goal, too.
And that's what I took from it, too, guys, was that he, like at that age, he hasn't lost a step.
Well, you know,
I mean, he still looked very quick.
Yeah, his stride, it's funny because I've always felt that he's one of those players that is deceiving in the way that he's able to like, his stride is so long and it's so fluid. He just almost glides along the ice, and you see it every single time. And I'm sure that Leaf fans are going to be able to appreciate just how much space he takes up with one single stride and how quick he gets back up and down the ice.
Gus, here in Winnipeg, team defense is one of the aspects that needs to improve dramatically here for the Jets to make a real good run at a playoff spot. And a bunch of that team defense needs to come by way of support in all the zones for this team on the ice. You a couple days ago were discussing the support that Mike Babcock has put into place and how it's impacted the Toronto Maple Leafs in a positive manner. Can you please talk to us about that?
Yeah, sure. Support is essentially my I would pretty much call it the most important method or the most important element on the ice. For instance, if you're in board battles one-on-one, it's essentially going to be a random decision. Someone's going to end up coming up with the puck. If there's support for one of those players, it's no longer random. Now you have it's a support with numbers. You either support with number or you support with space. And if you're supporting with space, that means defensively you're constructing another layer for whatever's happening with the puck to eventually become an outcome where your team regains it. In the neutral zone, you're just making sure that if something happens in a specific battle or whatever the case is, there's a support layer there to be able to either defuse the situation outright or just put a barrier to slow everything down. In the offensive zone, when you're looking for support, especially looking at like coming off the cycle or in board battles, you're looking for now that extra layer to be able to give your teammates the ability to fight for the puck, regain the puck, and move it somewhere else while holding off the defensive team from adding their own pressure in order to regain the puck. So to me, support is the most important aspect of any system. If there's a support layer that's missing, you're giving the other team a distinct advantage. And teams will look to break that support layer in order to break through their entire system. So I feel that it's probably it's more important defensively, I think, but I can't quantify that. It's just my opinion. But I feel that you can see support in every single aspect. I use Mike Babcock as an example because he had a terrible roster in his first year as a coach, and you could actually see the elements of support with this team. And then when they got more skilled players, you obviously see much better results because the structure, the foundation was already set with a terrible roster.
Well, and to that point, Paul Maurice was on our show last week just prior to training camp starting, Gus, and we asked him what, you know, the biggest challenge for him is, and he talked about defensive hockey, and he talked about how it is a skill and how it's a skill that players just naturally take longer to learn and develop than offense or anything else like that. So what are your legitimate expectations of improvement defensively for this Jets team?
I think that they can be better in transition. I think that they've added elements like Kulikov is a much better mobile option than, let's say, Marp Stewart or something like that. So if they can transition more effectively and especially get the puck to some very potent forwards up front, I think that's essentially the turnaround that the Jets will have to focus on. I mean, we all talk about playing defense, but the art, the concept of defense is changing drastically even as the game is being played. So I think that Winnipeg does a decent enough job either regaining possession of the puck, but they may not necessarily have the same wheels going back up the ice. And transition also happens in the neutral zone. It also happens in an offensive zone. Like it's a very complex element, but I feel that transition from defense to offense in any particular zone is what Winnipeg really needs to focus on to be a little bit more potent offensively and limit some goals against.
Gus, what do you think about Ken Hitchcock saying that his team wasn't good defensively because they weren't good offensively and their focus is going to be from the red line forward?
Well, to me that kind of sounds like a lot of pucks being thrown into the offensive zone just for the sake of zone time, and zone time isn't offensive zone. It isn't offensive creativity. You're in your offensive zone to score goals, so you put it there to create an opportunity to score goals. If the goal to be better defensively is to play around with the puck in the offensive zone or in the opposite, or from red line into the offensive zone, then you know, all you're really doing is just killing time off the clock. You're not necessarily doing what you're supposed to be doing to win games. And that goes when the score is 0-0, 1-0, or 7-0. You're essentially still doing the things to score goals, create offense, get the puck into the offensive zone to do that. You don't do that just to cycle. Endless cycling is just going to wear your team out. I know that they think that maybe it wears the defenseman out, but I mean, they get a chance to rest as well too. So unless you're physically beating and beating and beating and beating, and even that, your team takes that. I don't feel that being focused the way that Hitchcock put it on that side of the red line is tantamount to being better defensively. Being better defensively means you get the puck back and you score goals.
That's going to be interesting in Dallas.
Oh, yeah. That's about. Sure. Is there a bigger storyline, really, in the NHL than how much has Dallas improved this year?
Right? Well, right up front, you throw a player like Radulov, who was a fantastic acquisition for the Montreal Canadiens last year, and one of those driving factors, and you add him onto a team that's really determined in the first place, tweaking that defensive line and getting much better help in the goal crease, where it has been a problem for the better part of a long, long time.
Hey, Gus. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I know this isn't your expertise, but right before we go, what do you make of the Joffrey Lupul situation in Toronto? And, you know, he's got until tomorrow night at 5 Eastern to file something. No one's heard from him. Steve Simmons was on our afternoon ride program yesterday here on TSN 1290 and said that literally he's contacted people that represent him and say they can't get a hold of him after putting out that Instagram post.
Well, that's not surprising. I mean, if it came down to the situation where he put himself out there and now he has to deal with the type of repercussions, I'm not really sure what the thinking was behind Lupo making the comments that he did. I do know that it probably wasn't a smart idea in the first place. I get the frustration level, and I get that how it, even as a player, you're itching to get back, but to do so in that kind of a public forum, especially when you do have representation, and I'm sure considering the contract that he signed and the years that he's played in the league, he should have some type of strong enough of a representation to be able to take this matter to the Leafs or the league or the NHLPA or another entity and have it dealt with in a more quiet, efficient manner, perhaps to the betterment of both parties involved. Right now, it's just a fiasco, and anybody's just trying to do an element of PR to keep the damage control rather than try to rectify the situation. So he made a mistake. I think that it's going to end up being nothing in the end, but he could have done a better job figuring all this out.
Yeah, it wasn't a well-strategic plan to sort of, you're going to go and take Shanahan and Lamoriello publicly, huh?
It's just so bizarre because, like, I get what the Leafs are doing and the cap relief and everything else, and even if they bought him out, there's still, it counts against you for a couple seasons, so I get why their stance is. If he honestly feels this way, or if it's an injury that, you know, he feels he's ready to play but could, you know, 10 games into the season, activate or do something that he's out and then he's on the cap or whatever. Like, if he honestly feels this way, it just doesn't make sense from his point of view to not file.
Well, I guess that is one of his options. And if it came down to it, perhaps that's one of the reasons why nobody's actually heard from him. Maybe there's a strategy already involved in that.
Yeah, good point. Hey, Gus, we really appreciate your time as always. Great stuff. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Pleasure's mine. Same to you guys. Thanks.
Take care, brother.
We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line and maybe talk more about the Joffrey Lupul thing with my co-host here when we come back to The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki on The Big Show, TSN 1290, teeing up the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290, wide open, starting at 9 o'clock, just watching TSN's top 10 of coaches throwing players under the bus after McAdoo. That NCAA coach, my wife could score two baskets out of 11 shots, because my wife would know to fake a shot fake. That was one of the best rants I've ever seen. It's outstanding.
It's always near the end. The end of tenure as a coach, is there's 4 or 5 steps that kind of happen and transpire, and you know that it's just a bit of a slow march to their coaching death with the team that they're with.
Mike Singletary? Can't win with him. Don't want to.
I really
can't do it.
I wished he got a second chance somewhere, man.
So do I, actually. Yeah, that would be great. So we'll talk maybe your favorite time a coach threw somebody under the bus publicly, and we'll see how long Mr. McAdoo lasts in New York with the Giants. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Oilers tonight at 7 right here on TSN 1290. Your lineup, Michael Hutchinson, Steve Mason are the goalies. Mason gets the start in net. Dmitry Kulikov, Jacob Trouba, Andrew Kopp, Brandon Tanev, Matt Hendricks, Sean Mathias, Nick Patan, Josh Morrissey, Jack Roslovic, Tyler Myers, Sammy Niku are all making their debut tonight in the preseason. Along with the lineup will be the second games for Scheifele, Perreault, Byfuglien, Laine, Ehlers, Wheeler, and Little. Your thoughts on the lineup, and who are you looking keeping an eye on?
Well, it'll be, see Tyler Myers back out there and clipping along, looking healthy, playing at a good level. And if he's out there with whoever he's situated with, I just wonder going forward, everyone, by all indications, is healthy and good to go. Kulikov, it'll be fun to watch him play out there for the first time, although we know he's going to be here. This group isn't as – and Sammy Niku is going to be another guy here who's on the back end that'll be well worth a watch tonight. Up front, it's not as intriguing, to maybe see, like, Jack Roslovic will be there, but it's seemingly with what Paul Maurice said, he's on his way back to the Moose, no doubt about it here, but hopefully he can go out there and make a bit of a splash. But yeah, like Brandon Tanev, I don't expect him to be with the big club and all the rest of it. So yeah, not as intriguing to me the lineup tonight as it was in the first game as far as focusing on certain guys and watching.
I've been pumping Sammy Niku's tires for a while now, and I maintain that he's going to be one of the surprises in terms of prospects this season. And I bet you by tomorrow morning, we might have a segment dedicated to Paul Maurice talking about Sammy Niku. I think he's going to be a real big revelation for the team this year. And I am going to keep my eye on, I think, Kulikov more than Myers, because we talk about Myers' absence, but Kulikov missed a load of time last season. And he was good in Florida, not good at all in Buffalo.
Yeah.
And it looks like, judging by the players in the lineup tonight, that he would play with Byfuglien, I would assume. And that would be your second D pairing this season.
I think he's going to have a real strong bounce back year this year, man.
I do too.
Yeah, I think it was a great pickup.
I do too. And I'm just interested to see the dynamic of that pairing if they're together. Just what they look like on the ice and how well Kulikov can compliment Buff.
From a forward, like Nick Patant will be the story for me up front here. And I hope he just has a glorious night just to stoke the fire in the debate that much more tomorrow.
Who are you keeping an eye on tonight? What do you want to see? What are your thoughts on the face-off rules and the slashing calls in the National Hockey League? Winnipeg Goldeyes host Game 5, do or die for the championship tonight as well, if you want to weigh in on that. Jamal Westerman done for the year and the Bombers, anything and everything coming up next on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as the Jets host the Oilers right here on TSN 1290, 7 o'clock tonight. A full pre- and post-game coverage, of course. Afternoon ride live from Boss Pizza City Place with Rick Ralph and Hustler. Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live from BP City Place with Kevin Olszewski and friends. Puck drop at 7 with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns. And, of course, Olszewski has the Huron Windows postgame show from BP as well. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and your calls now on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. And just a quick quote from Joe Thomas, the Cleveland Browns offensive lineman, who 10,000 snaps, never missed a snap in his entire career as an offensive lineman in the National Football League. And a reminder from ESPN that he's played with a lot of quarterbacks in Cleveland. Quote, I've been in the huddle one time when a quarterback came in and I did not know who he was and I had to shake his hand and introduce myself.
How can that be with the meetings and things like that that happen during the course of the week? That is
That's Cleveland,
up.
Baby.
That is.
That's an extra large serving of messed up right there.
And, you know, and good for Joe Thomas on receiving the Nobel Peace Prize this year for not inflicting physical harm towards anyone in that Browns organization. Just to talk about the ultimate case of a player not deserving the team that he's on.
That stat of 10,000 straight snaps without missing one offensive snap in his career in Cleveland over a decade for an offensive lineman in this day and age is unbelievable to me.
I would think, I bet you Walby did something close to that.
You think so, eh?
I don't remember, I might be wrong, but I don't remember him ever missing a snap when I was on the team and he was playing. And he was, I dare suggest, and he and along with a couple of the other guys, like, you know, when they had that O-line there for a while, like guys like McNeil and Black, they could be out there a limb lost and they'd still find their way out in the field. So I wonder how many of the guys, the Bomber guys that people remember would have stats similar to that.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. To the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, your thoughts on the Jets, who you're keeping an eye on tonight in the lineup. We have it here for you. Also, your thoughts on the calls for slashing and the face-off circle new rules, your impressions of that. The Bombers, no more Jamal Westerman, Goldeyes tonight, do or die. Anything and everything, 780-1290. Barry, you're kicking us off this morning on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, boys, are you ready for some football? Yep. Hey, I got a football question for you here, guys. I'm watching the game the other day, and it was great to see a Canadian quarterback playing quarterback. He played really well that game. Mm-hmm. Now, it comes to mind that the Canadian ratio, when you have a Canadian quarterback, that Canadian quarterback does not go against your Canadian ratio on that team. Now, why would they not have it go against your Canadian ratio, whereby more teams would consider grooming a Canadian quarterback to play quarterback, where they can bring in another American in any other position? Why is that? Would you happen to know the rule and why it is that way?
Yeah, great question, man. I do not know why. There's been all kinds of things proposed to possibly help sort of nurture and bring along that position for Canadians. Because, Barry, in today's and when you see a Canadian kid who's really athletic playing at a, like, say for the Rifles at a junior level or in university in Canada, most often that Canadian kid will switch positions before he turns pro, knowing that there's your chance to stick and stay with the CFL team is minimal. So you're like a Sinopoli, he'll go out to receiver or whatever, that sort of thing. It's, and you know, I think I've heard Matt Dunnigan in the past say that there should be like a fourth spot within the roster sort of built there that teams would have to absorb that cost to bring along a Canadian kid. I would like to see something similar to a situation like that, where maybe you have a spot. I know it costs teams extra money and they wouldn't be very open-minded to it, but it would be, it's a real neat storyline, isn't it?
It is, but it would be more beneficial to me as a coach to bring in a Canadian kid, groom him, and there's one of my Canadian players already, so I don't have to worry about the racial. As it is, he can be anybody. I'm going to bring in an American quarterback for some goofy reason they do this. I don't understand it. The kids down in the States don't even know our game, and we're bringing them up, and we've got guys who win the heck. I can't remember the athlete who won the Heck Creighton Award, but he won it like 2 or 3 years in a row, and he couldn't even get a kick at a training camp. Yeah. It don't make no sense bringing a guy from the States who don't even know our game.
It might even make sense, and I know this would never in a million years happen, but you could certainly twist the thoughts or minds of some coaches if you had a Canadian quarterback and that counted as two spots, you know, so you could have more Americans on the field if you had a Canadian quarterback. But ultimately, it's just that quarterback is the most important position. You just want the best athlete possible, and let's hope that Bridge, if he gets another chance to start here, grabs another win.
I put him in my TSN 1290 CFL fantasy lineup, and he did outstanding. 21 points, I think, three mm-hmm. touchdowns.
Clutch.
He was good. Barry, thanks for the call on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. We appreciate it. Who's next?
Jeff.
Jeff, you are on the Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
Morning, boys.
Morning.
Troy, I figure Walby probably did 25% fewer snaps.
Yeah.
That's three-down football.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a little math joke. Hey, on these face-offs.
I got it. Yeah.
Did he get it? Okay.
Yeah.
A little early in the morning. It's early in the school year. On these face-offs, I'm getting tired of the constantly kicking the guy out. And then this penalty, first I've heard of it was actually this morning. That's just plain stupid. It reminds me of the story about Bobby Clark back in the, and Brandon, you should know this one. He's in a face-off, and the ref's not dropping the puck, and he finally just stood up and just said to the ref, says, you see that poor guy sitting there that dropped $35 for the ticket? He didn't pay $35 to watch you drop the puck. So just do your job and get the game going. And Bobby Clark could probably pull something off like that without getting booed out of the game. But anyway, just wanted to call in about the math. Love the show, guys.
Yeah, we appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks for that. One of the best lines I have.
I don't get the math thing, man. It snaps. It's not, but whatevs.
Well, Joe Thomas gets the ability to play more. Although, to be fair, with Cleveland's offense, it might actually be less snaps than the
That's
ball.
That's right. Yeah.
So we'll check. We'll double check that math.
Hot take: maybe he's part of the problem. He's that good.
Do you guys admire him? Like Jason Cole said yesterday, he's basically wasted his career. But there's a big chunk of me, like with the if he's got that connection, drafted by them, and the loyalty, I think it's a real cool story. I don't see it as why he's wasted his career. I think it's really neat that he's done that and decided to, you know, because he's obviously made a decision to ride it out and just.
Well, we were just talking about that. Like they were talking about trading him. Does he have a no trade, or does he have to weigh in, or are they just sort of?
You can't. Nobody has got no trade.
Nobody in the NFL. Yeah.
No,
they just Hell didn't no. move him. They just didn't trade him.
So I don't know if it's a waste. I mean, it's a waste to have that much talent for that long and not have any success team-wise, I guess. But I just highly admire him. I mean, I love the story Cole told yesterday, and I forgot all about it, that on draft day he went fishing with his dad.
Yeah.
And
How
he
cool
said, it's going to play out the way it plays out, and I'm not going to pass up a chance to go fishing with my dad.
Yeah.
And he got a phone call that, hey, the Cleveland Browns drafted you, and I don't know if he's wasted his career, but it's a shame to have that much of a talented guy and not have any playoff success whatsoever.
Well, and if he's happy, I mean, I don't get how you can fault a guy for if he's happy. Like, if Joe Thomas is happy playing in Cleveland and he's with family and friends and he's making crazy amounts of money and he's successful personally on the field, why fault someone for being happy with their life just because they don't get the wins necessarily? Like, it's.
I think it's neat when you have that sort of connection, whatever it is for him, with the Browns, right? With that jersey, with the organized. Like, I think, and even with all the struggle, I think it's cool and sort of old-fashioned when you have that sort of mesh with the organization and putting on that helmet and the jersey. I think it's really neat.
And if they ever do win, like, how much sweeter will that be for a guy like Joe Thomas, right? Like, eventually, if they ever get to even just a playoff, like, to get a playoff win a couple years down the road.
Well, how long is he going to be around? Like, they're not going to win while he's there.
Oh.
What's he played, 12 years now?
10 years.
10 years?
10 years, 9-time All-Pro.
Wow.
Yeah.
9 times All-Pro, 10 years in Cleveland. And never missed a snap. Not one snap. Not even when the game is out of hand and you're getting lit up, do they go, let's give Joe a rest because it's a long season.
It's really cool, yeah.
It's an outstanding stat on Joe Thomas, the offensive lineman for the Cleveland Browns. Back to the Jets and their lineup. You brought up the point about Sammy Nikeau, and I am very interested in seeing what he does tonight. He had a really good, from what we understand, prospects camp or rookie tournament out in Penticton. He'll be in the lineup tonight. And really, this we're talking about the top six, and we're talking about Myers and his minutes that he's going to get this year and where it's all going to play out. But we looked at Tucker Poolman. I thought he looked pretty good. And now Sammy Nikeau's hanging around here. Nelson Noje, I think, clearly, based on the one game he's played with the penalties he took, not ready for that jump, but did play well last year. The depth at defense this year could be something that is polar opposite of what happened last year.
I think Noje, when he was called upon by the Jets, he, you know, as far as 8, 9, 10 sort of thing. That right now the Jets look to me to be in pretty good spot with the depth defensively. So I think it's a great story going forward, and you wonder, you know, how things are going to work out with Trouba. Anstrom would appear to be most likely on his way out at the end of this contract, but things just an area that was had a fair amount of concern. And you want, if Kulikov is back to good health, like all of a sudden this could be a real serious strength for the Jets for years to come with the way things are situated right
well,
now.
Well, and how long ago was Ben Chiarot the number four defenseman on this team?
Yeah.
Like at points last season, for sure 2 years ago he was, and now he's your seventh defenseman. And if everything goes according to plan, he might not get into a game this season. So that's it's kind of crazy how the Jets have maneuvered themselves. I don't think it's a position of strength as of right now, but it's not a weak. It's not the weakness that it was a year or two ago. Because say what you will about Ben Chiarot's shortcomings, but look at other number seven D-men around the league, and that's not the worst spot for the Jets to be in.
You guys think Tucker Pullman has a chance of making this team, even if he play like say he plays really well throughout training camp, but everybody's healthy? Is it Pullman over Chiarot, or is this Chiarot spot at number seven?
I would guess it's Chiarot's spot at number seven, unless Tucker Pullman just is out of this world. I just the familiarity, he's been here, that I would think that it's Chiarot's spot.
I don't even think it matters what Pullman does. Because you want him playing games. You want to see how that shoulder does. And he's never played pro before. It's not even a guy like Sami Niku, at least he's played in Finland, played a year against men. Tucker Pullman, as a 24-year-old, played against, you know, freshman and sophomore last year. So I think for Pullman, priority number one is having him as the seventh defenseman makes no sense at all.
I find it interesting tonight with Connor not being in the lineup and with so few minutes in game one, it's sort of an interesting thing for me. Like a bunch of his minutes came on the penalty kill. Like he just wasn't put in a position to be successful in game one, sitting in game two. Now all of a sudden you got five games left.
Well, and they play tomorrow night too, and they play Saturday. So I would expect that he'll get – I bet he's in the game tomorrow in Minnesota. But it's a valid point. You know what else stands out to me is –
doesn't have a lot of time to if he – you know, I guess they've got him penciled in, and he would have to maybe play his way out of the top nine or on the left side of Lowry. But you hope that he's able to shine a little bit here.
You know what? Given his ice time, I think that's a great statement. I think he's penciled in. I think he's on the third line, and unless – they're going to give him a shot like they did last year. If he got 20 games last year, I don't see why he wouldn't get 20 this year.
Fair.
And then, you know, evaluate it from then. We have a call. We'll get to that very next. We just got to take a quick break on the Big Show, and we'll be back with the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
If you want to get in on the conversation via text, 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. And, of course, give us a call on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. Your thoughts on tonight's lineup, who you're looking forward to seeing, what your expectations are. And, of course, the NHL rules with the face-offs and the slashing calls that is going on in the National Hockey League. Blue Bombers 2, no Jamal Westerman for the rest of the season. And the Goldeyes tonight, get your thoughts on that. If you're going, were you there for the epic Game 4? Talking about the defense corps and the depth there and where it might go to with Sami Niku in the lineup tonight. And, of course, Tucker Pullman played on Monday. And Ben Chiarot being around. The other part of this training camp and the depth they have is what we expect from the Manitoba Moose this year. It's most likely, Eric Comrie will be there as their starter, but it's most likely Michael Hutchinson, who has had his ups and downs in the National Hockey League, but has had a very strong AHL career, will be there backstopping the Moose for a 1-2 tandem. And then you're going to see some of these guys, like if Nick Petan doesn't make the roster, Jack Roslovic seems to be going back. You have, you know, probably Sami Niku and Tucker Pullman down there just to see how far they come as an organization, as a team as well, with this depth that, you know, there's just not enough spots for some high-end players that the Jets are developing.
It would be nice for the Moose to have a strong team, I suppose, right? Like a team that has been young and kind of got it taken them to them the last 68 points last year, were the Chicago Wolves, who won the division 101, for instance. It was just how far away they've been from being truly competitive there. It would be great if the Moose were strong, and it looks like they're going to be considerably stronger this year than last, and better than a couple years ago, for sure.
Bottom six forwards in the lineup tonight. We're going to get our first look at Brandon Tanev, Matt Hendricks, Sean Mathias, Andrew Kopp are all going to be in the lineup this evening, and the battle for those final few spots on this roster continue. Matt Hendricks, Sean Mathias, like, what are we going to see from these guys throughout the preseason, and who gets the roster spots?
Yeah, and I'm not like that whole. I suppose it should be somewhat intriguing to me because they are guys that'll be battling, but it's real hard for me to imagine because we haven't seen it happen yet. When you got vets like Mathias, for instance, like for him to get pushed aside here or to not be on the ice very often, I'm gonna have to see Paul Maurice make that decision before I think it's gonna happen. You know, like it's hard for me to. Why should we think that Dano's going to be able to push a guy like Mathias, for instance, out of the way when we've seen Paul Maurice sort of default to the cagey veteran in the past before young players? So I'm just sort of discouraged in watching that sort of situation.
I liked Sean Mathias's game prior to his injury last year.
They had a great thing going on that line. That's for darn sure.
Couldn't finish,
but zero finish. Yeah.
Yeah, lots of opportunities. That's a good point. They created lots of opportunities, but had a little bit of difficult burying them. 12 points in 45 games, 8 goals for Sean Mathias. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Who's next?
We got Bruce.
Bruce, you're back. How are you, sir? Go ahead.
Good. Do you not think that people like Mathias, which our previous caller was just talking about, along with you can go even as far as Perreault, that they're fillers until our young stars get on their feet and are able to compete at the same level.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think they have to beat these guys out for sure. It's just a matter of, I guess, how well they play. And it's an interesting question because what would you have to do to take that spot if you're, I don't know, Nick Petan or... I don't know if Nick Petan's the right comparison to Mathias.
Like a Dano or a Brendan Lemieux,
Dano,
right?
Or Lemieux, yeah, to take that spot from a guy like Sean Mathias or I think Andrew Kopp's on the team.
I honestly think this year that we're looking at Dano, Tanev being fillers or injuries that will obviously come to us in this season that we're working in. But we'll have the depth with these other senior players that won't be around next year. And we use the younger ones next year after they've learned.
Yeah. I mean, that's... You're never going to complain about having that depth and options, especially with injuries, for any National Hockey League team. Who are you looking forward to seeing tonight, Bruce?
Sorry, Bruce is
gone. Bruce, sorry. We got to go. We got to take a break. But thanks for the call, and we'll take more of your calls next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jets Oilers on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day preseason action. 7 o'clock today on TSN 1290. This is The Big Show with Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. And your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Thanks for the call, Bruce, Jeff, and Barry. Norm, you're now on The Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Well, thanks. And yourself?
Hey, Troy. I'm doing very good. I was going to say, go, guys, bring home another championship for Winnipeg. The rings probably will look even bigger this year.
Can never get enough.
I was going to say about the Jets. I want to watch the goalie, whatever, the new goalie, and Kulikov, whatever. I want to see the difference with the puck-handling ability. Like, for Hellebuck, he's a little bit tentative with the puck, whatever. I want to see the difference tonight. And go Jets, go. And I'll hang up, guys.
Thanks very much, Norm. Yeah, and Brandon, you touched on that earlier in the program a couple hours ago when we first started about Steve Mason will get the start. It'll be the first look in-game action from Steve Mason in Winnipeg Jets uniform, and some of the skills he'll bring that are different than what we've seen from Jets goalies in the past. Andre Pavlik, Connor Hellebuck, Michael Hutchinson.
Yeah, like he's not Martin Brodeur with the puck or anything like that, but he'll be one of the better goalies in the league at handling the puck and making plays. So is it going to add X amount of goals for and take away goals against? Not necessarily, but it's going to make life easier for sure for the Jets defense. And at the very least, you won't see some of the, you know, the Hellebuck-Stewart mishap that you saw last year. I think the defense will be much more comfortable in letting Mason play the puck towards them instead of them constantly having to go behind the net and try and work out the breakout from there.
Who else are you looking forward to seeing or going to keep an eye on the Jets roster tonight against the Oilers, and your thoughts on the faceoff and the slashing calls that are taking place in the National Hockey League? 780-1290 on the Boston Pizza fan line if you wish to weigh in on that and anything else. We should, again, bring up the fact that Jamal Westerman is done for the season. Out since, well, they had their bye week, but he would have been hurt in the Banjo Bowl was last game action. They had the bye week, then he wasn't at practice. They said they're evaluating it. Mike O'Shea spoke yesterday saying they're still waiting on some stuff from the afternoon. And then yesterday afternoon around 4 o'clock, the Bombers announced that Jamal Westerman is done for the season. And he will speak with the media after today's practice and at the media availability following today's Winnipeg Blue Bombers practice. But this is a big hit for the defensive line for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers with no more Jamal Westerman.
Yeah, it's a big hit, but I don't think it's going to hurt the team as much as ultimately people think. I think that Jackson Jeffcoat and Tristan Okpologo will do a pretty solid job there. The Bombers can absorb this from a ratio standpoint. And ultimately, what I'm most intrigued to watch here while Jamal Westerman heals up and up until he gets back is how many more snaps a game does this give Canadian Trent Corney, who goes 100 miles an hour and has had to refine his game upon his arrival. And we heard Michael Shea talk about him, how he felt that he's blossomed as a player in the early stages of this season. This might be a situation here where this catapults Trent Corney from a backup role maybe into a starting role going into next season sort of thing. There's always opportunity attached to injury in pro sports here, and certainly in this situation. And I think Trent Corney is going to walk through a door if Jamal Westerman ends up being out for a bit of a time frame here.
And these are the numbers from his pro day last year, again, in case you missed them earlier. 34 reps on the bench press, which would have actually been the most of any defensive lineman at last year's combine. And then
That's 225.
Yeah. And then on top of that, he rips off a 38-inch vertical and then a 10-foot-6-inch broad jump, which would have been second in NFL participants in each of those. And then the cherry on top was the 4.540 that he threw on after that. So, I mean, those are elite linebacker numbers, let alone defensive lineman numbers. And if he has a lick of football sense and IQ, there's not really a whole lot that can hold him back at the CFL level.
If he's sort of honed his skill, right? Sometimes you're that fast and that strong, you don't pay attention to some of the finer things and really truly work on your craft. You sort of lean on the athleticism that you have. If he's learned to, and if during his time here with the Bombers, if he's become more refined and can mix some brains and savvy with the ridiculous raw attributes that he's got, he's going to be a ridiculous force here. And it will just be, if he can walk through that door, my goodness, it'll be something to watch.
You can also tweet us here on The Big Show at Jim Till Sports, at Troy Westwood, at Brandon _ Rewicki. Our good friend Dom, who's a loyal listener, Poolman has had a solid game, going to be pretty good. NHLer needs to play games. Sherratt was also solid. Poolman will be the first call up. He has Sherratt on the lineup or on the opening day roster. I do as well. Derek Schmidt says, excited as a Moose fan to watch some of the young guys get more seasoning in the A. They'll help the Jets later this year and next. And, you know, that's a good point. Last year, Andrew Kopp gets sent down and, you know, goes down from training camp and then comes back and really not only played well, but moved himself up the lineup when injuries played in and stayed the rest of the season. Andrew Kopp's another guy playing tonight that where and how they're going to play him is interesting to me.
Yeah, I suppose so, but it's the he seemed to really flourish. Like it, a nice option or possibility at center, but I think everyone that watched last year, he really flourished at left wing there. And when you got it, they bring in a guy like Hendricks, and with some of the verbiage we've heard either from the organization or for Hendricks himself, it's real easy for me to imagine Hendricks in the middle and Kopp on the left side of that fourth line.
Yeah, I really wonder what Hendricks is going to bring to the table. Like, just how he looks out there. Like, is because the age, when you look at an older guy, the first thing you do is, can he keep up out there? And I wonder if that's going to be the case for him. And if he's going to be able to, I just don't know if he's going to be able to push play well enough to be on an NHL team. But it seems like the Jets have, not in pen, but they penciled him into that fourth line center role. I just wonder, especially with the amount of kids that are going to be in tonight that are pushing kind of specifically for that last couple of forward spots. It'll be intriguing to see how he compares to some of the young guys tonight.
And he will be in the lineup as well. Is he on your opening day roster and not yours, but do you feel it sounds like he is a part of this team? Because when we were signed, we talked about, you know, is it depth? Is it, you know, where is he going to be at? But it sounds as the it gets closer and closer to opening day that Matt Hendricks does have a spot on the opening day roster. It could be as a healthy scratch, but
yeah. And what I'm, you know, with Nick Petan here, and I know a lot of people are just kind of brushing him off, but if Nick Petan takes the jump last year to this that he did the year previous to last, right? That like coming into last year, this time last year, people were of the mindset that Nick Petan didn't skate well enough to play in the NHL. And when he did have the opportunity, there were some droughts. You bring up the number of games without a point and all the rest of it. But there was a considerable jump that he took in that offseason. And if he takes – if that same jump presents itself here during the course of these preseason games, boy, he could make things real difficult on decisions with the fourth line center here. I'm really intrigued to see where Nick Petan is at.
I think, I mean, everything we've heard says Hendricks will be on the opening night roster. I wouldn't do it, but that's kind of what I would guess as of right now. And the biggest thing I kind of have an issue with is just the fact that people hear the name Matt Hendricks and I guess supporters will say
penalty kill.
The penalty kill thing. Yeah. Like just they're just throwing it out there like it's some kind of, you know, automatic conclusion without even really looking into it. And the Oilers were outshot and outscored on the PK with him on it last year compared to the other players. So, like, yeah, he played penalty kill time, but are you effective in that role? And he may have been, I don't know the numbers of him when he was with Washington, but I know he got a lot of time there. And he might have been a hell of a penalty killer with the Caps. But as of right now,
with his age,
to just label him a guy that can help the PK, I don't know. By the numbers last year, he didn't help Edmonton's penalty kill. So that I'm a little worried about that. That you bring in a guy with a label, but the numbers don't necessarily back up what he performed out there.
It'll be interesting to see. And what are your thoughts? Who are you looking forward to seeing in the lineup tonight? As it is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day. Winnipeg Jets hosting the Edmonton Oilers. And we're just pouring over the roster. If you want to weigh in, feel free to do so on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, or send us a text at 129090. So the guys that weren't in Monday's lineup that will play tonight include Steve Mason and Michael Hutchinson. Steve Mason will get the start in net tonight. Dmitry Kulikov will be in the lineup. Jacob Trouba, Andrew Kopp, Brandon Tanev, Matt Hendricks, Sean Mathias, Nick Petan, Josh Morrissey, Jack Roslovic, Tyler Myers, Sammy Niku. The returning guys are the top six from Monday's game 2 days ago. Matthew Perreault, Mark Scheifele, Dustin Byfuglien will play. That's obviously on the blue line. Patrick Laine, Nikola Ehlers, Blake Wheeler, and Brian Little will all be in the lineup tonight as well. So the defense has been switched out, save for Dustin Byfuglien. And then, of course, the bottom six forward line is going to be different. Your impressions of them keeping the top-end guys there? Paul Maurice saying on Monday that we're going to try and get these guys going right away. We're not going to ease into camp. We want these guys firing on all cylinders by October 4th when the Toronto Maple Leafs come to town. And again, the big names on this team are dressing again tonight for the second straight game.
Hey, man, that's his plan of attack. Certainly give him, like, he, you know, that's what they feel serves the team the very best. That's cool with me, man. And they are fun to watch. There were plenty of times in that first game, specifically with Scheifele, Wheeler, and Laine out there, where they were just some bunch of beautiful passing plays and in the zone for extended periods of time. So it's, they're going to be fun to watch, those top six, top two lines for sure.
The Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. We have some calls coming in. We're going to get to those right away. But a reminder, you can also text 1290-90 with standard message rates. Applying on a Birch Ridge Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Oilers tonight. Paul Edmonds and Brian Munz will have the call at 7 o'clock, full pre and post. To the Boss Pizza fan line, once again, 780-1290. Who's next?
It's Kevin.
Kevin, welcome to the big show. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's a two-part quick question. First, I'm curious because I haven't been able to do a lot of digging. Mason, what are his numbers in the, I'm just curious, in the playoffs? And how does he fare during the season? Is he a season better player or a playoff better player? And then my second part is, with all the changes and stuff that have been going on and Vegas winning their first game, I'd like to listen to your guys' thoughts on what do you think, I mean, I'm just throwing it out just for the hell of it. What do you think would happen if Vegas actually makes the playoffs? Do you think they could make a push with the team that they have? I'd like to sit back and listen. And you guys have yourselves a great day.
Thanks, Kevin. We appreciate the call, and you have yourself a great day as well. Steve Mason's number, 5-on-5, good. Last year...
He was asking regular season and playoffs.
Yeah, and I'm just saying 5-on-5 throughout his career, he's been pretty good. Playoffs...
He had one good run with Philly, one bad run with Philly, and a bad run with Columbus. So he's got 12 career playoff games.
Only 12 games and an 8.95 save percentage, yeah.
Yes, there we go.
And 9.11 regular season save percentage career.
But 9.18 over his career with the Flyers. So if you want to do the Columbus-Philly split, and if you're a believer and he's a new player after that, then hopefully you're getting above average numbers.
As for Vegas, I still struggle to see how they're going to be very good. I think they'll be competitive, but I don't see them pushing for a playoff spot at any time this year.
Yeah, I'll be really surprised if they make the playoffs, but I do think they'll be very competitive, a lot better than most people think.
Yeah, unless that Shipachev becomes a revelation as a first-line center and Fleury stands on his head, I just don't see a way they squeak in, let alone be... You know, a bit of a threat come playoff time.
Like, he and James Neal and Marchessault, I think, are going to score goals for the team. Other than that, I don't know who's going to score goals. Yeah.
By
I really
committee,
don't.
Man.
What's that?
By committee, a la Nashville.
I guess. So I don't. I know they won their first two preseason games. They beat Vancouver 9-4. They beat Colorado last night 4-1. I just don't see them being very. I think they'll be okay. I don't think I see them as competitive as Troy thinks they will be, and I don't see them making a push for the playoffs at all this season. But it'll be interesting for sure to see how this comes together. And I believe in Gerard Gallant. I think he's a good coach. They've got some good goaltending there, so we'll see how it all plays out. The other thing that I saw on TSN yesterday when watching some of the hockey panel talk was the number of defensemen they still have. And probably their best defenseman is Theodore from Anaheim they picked up, but he's the one guy that can be sent down to the American Hockey League, and he's probably going to be the one guy you don't want to. He's going to be probably your top pairing. So what they do before the end of training camp, and the panelists on TSN were saying that they expect a trade or two to happen with Vegas before training camp.
How about a fire sale? That's what's going to happen, man. They got like, what, 11 guys? Something crazy like that under contract?
Yeah. Like that's quite the leap, right? AHL to top pairing. And that's what it's probably going to end up being unless they move. They got to move at least two guys, you would think, and then probably send one down to the A after that. You wonder if a team's going to be able to get a discount on one of those defensemen.
Now you would think so, yeah, right? A couple months ago it wasn't that case, and now all of a sudden they've been left hanging with all these guys.
And I hear that, and I immediately think, Chicago is going to do something that I don't like.
You're dang right.
Yeah, well, They need some. So it'll be interesting for sure. Thanks for the call, Kevin. We appreciate it. It is, once again, a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Who are you looking for tonight in the lineup? What are you expecting? And are you going to the Gold Eyes game? Game 5, championship game tonight at Shaw Park. Anything and everything else as well. 780-1290 when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you on the Big Show on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Rick, you are on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing okay. I want to get your opinions on something that, I've been batting around here regarding three-on-three overtime and the use of Bufflin. I don't know if you guys have touched on this at all, because in my opinion, if I had to rank which defenseman I would have on for three-on-three overtime, Bufflin would literally rank fourth on my list. Behind Myers, Trouba, Morrissey. And then Bufflin would be bringing up a fourth spot if needed. What's your take on that?
Personally, I would have him ahead of Trouba and Myers.
You'd have him in front of Trouba. Yeah.
Yeah. On three-on-three, I would.
I don't like him in three-on-three. I agree with Rick. Where, like, three-on-three situations, to me, the speed is absolutely massive in those three-on-three situations, sort of speed and wind, right? And it seems to me that he doesn't typically flourish in those situations. So I definitely Trouba and the skating of – it's. And especially what highlighted it last year for me, guys, is that he was so gassed during the three periods. To throw him out there, I remember one time in a three-on-three situation, he was out on the ice for a minute 30 and was just absolutely dead and done. Up ice and real slow to get back. So, yeah, unless his minutes are managed profoundly different this year, then, yeah, I for the most part, strongly agree with North.
Yeah, the Jets opened the Wild game in OT with Bufflin, Laine, and I can't remember, it might have been Ehlers. And it was some of the worst defensive three-on-three I've ever seen in my life. Like, it was a miracle they didn't get scored on. So the thing with Buff, though, is that in the three-on-three specifically, the game's going to end in about 45 seconds. Because the puck's going to end up in the net. It's going to be either in the opposing net or someone in their own end is going to lose it. So
you mean
that's
with
the trade-off.
On the ice or in general?
With Buff on the ice.
Oh, okay.
Just three-on-three. Like, that's just the way he plays. He takes chances. He's not super committed to tight turns and things like that in his own zone. Yeah. But if he gets the puck on his stick...
That's a funny way to say that.
But if he gets the puck on his stick, it's mm-hmm. over. Like, that's the trade-off.
It's not necessarily over. It's definitely headed towards the other net.
And you're getting a good scoring chance out of it. So that's the trade-off you have to take with that. I do like your point, though, of if you get a Bufflin off of 22 minutes going into 3-on-3, then, yeah, go Trouba Bufflin, and you work with it from there. But if he's playing 25, 26, 27, you might want to kind of pick your spots when you put Buff out there on the ice.
When I think of 3-on-3, I'm not concerned about defense. I worry about offense. It's 3-on-3, and that's why I have him ahead of Trouba.
In that case, why do you have a defenseman out there then?
Yeah.
Well, because you need a defenseman.
No, you don't. If you're not worried about defense, why do you need a defenseman? You just said you're not worried about D.
My priority is offense on 3-on-3. You schedule out a 3-on-3 and you structure it defensively?
Well,
you sit
I'm
down
going
and draw
to,
it
yeah.
up and practice
the
defensive zone coverage on a 3-on-3?
Yeah, I'm not going to give that. I want somebody out there that is capable to manage and handle a 2-on-1.
That's why you have a
us.
Defenseman out there.
But you just said, working on your statement, Jim, you just said you're not worried about defense when you're out there.
It's not my priority. I'm not drawing up my 3-on-3 and structuring it defensively first. I'm drawing up my 3-on-3. That's why you put your skilled forwards out there. If you're worried about it defensively more than offensively, why are you putting Ehlers and these guys out there? Why aren't you starting with your defensive forwards?
Well, you don't need to. You know, look, man, today's NHL, the best forwards are completely capable defensively, right? And at some point in time, like if you have, for instance, if you're going with Scheifele and Wheeler and whoever's going to be your D, you're not worried about things defensively. I don't even prioritize things offensive. The second you don't have the puck, you better be thinking defensively and be sound out there. I think it's completely an evenly distributed concern, offense and defense, 3-on-3.
Well, that's why I have a defenseman out there. I structure it offensively. I look at how to put the best team chance out there to score, and I throw a defenseman out there. But if I'm throwing a D-man out there, it's going to be one that's going to try and score.
Well, and Dustin Byfuglien is that. I want him at the top of the triangle in the offensive zone. Right? Like you want your D-man out there 3-on-3 playing D and distributing the puck, but you need him in that defensive position, and it just seems to me very often 3-on-3 Buff will be leading the charge and lost defensively on the comeback from the other team.
Good call, Rick. We appreciate it. And Martin, we have to apologize. We do have to go, but hey, if you're the 12th caller through, we have a pair of tickets to this Friday's Bombers Red Blacks game, Friday at Investors Group Field, 780-1290. 12th caller through is going to the Red Blacks and the Bombers Friday at IGF. We appreciate you listening on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. We'll recap it all and tee up tomorrow's game in Minnesota as well when the big show returns tomorrow morning. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening, and the Big Show will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.